Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
In the Live Oak area. Coffeetopia is also the oldest internet cafe in Santa Cruz, with wireless and by-the-minute computer stations. Other places use ice as fillers for their smoothies, but not Coffeetopia. They use all fruit and juices when making their delicious smoothies, and they also feature tropical, high-energy, acai smoothies, bagels, and fresh baked goods.
Coffee, coffee, Coffeetopia.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bob Fuss, live on Capitol Hill, where the $800 billion economic stimulus bill President Obama says is critical to prevent economic catastrophe has just survived a test vote in the Senate, barely. With Republicans filibustering, the measure needed 60 votes. It got 61, including three Republicans. One was Susan Collins of Maine, who said doing nothing is simply no longer an option.
Every day brings another report of a business laying off hundreds or even thousands of workers.
The rest of the Republican senators, including Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, voted to stop the bill.
What I can consider basically an orgy of spending up here.
This vote clears the way for the Senate to pass the stimulus measure tomorrow and begin negotiating with the House to fix the differences between the two bills. I'm Bob Fuss, live on Capitol Hill. Now with more CBS News, here's Harley Karn.
Coming up in 2 hours, President Obama plans a news conference to talk about the stimulus and his plans for reaching a compromise he can sign. The death toll in Australia's bushfires near Melbourne has hit 173, far and away the deadliest bushfires ever. CBS's Nicole Enberg is in New South Wales.
Authorities today were even saying, you know, just make sure you're not driving. It's almost better to, you know, make a choice. Protect your land if the fire's close, or else, you know, get out right away. They're having authorities pick up people, but they don't want people just driving around. The roads are incredibly unsafe right now, and the fire is so unpredictable.
Many of the victims thus far are people who were caught in smoke so dense they wound up in accidents as though in a fog bank, and the smoke and the fire caught up to them. It's the kind of admission that shakes the sport of baseball because Alex Rodriguez has been one of the game's pillars, supremely gifted and considered drug-free. Maybe today, but not always.
I was young. I was stupid. I was naive.
A-Rod admitted on ESPN when he was with the Texas Rangers for 3 years he used steroids. CBS's Armin Katayan.
He said he wasn't sure what he was doing, but whatever he was doing certainly was working because he averaged 52 home runs and 130 RBIs during that three-year period from 2001 to 2003, and that's the best in baseball.
His numbers did fall off somewhat in 04, though he's still considered one of the league's best players. Americans lost $48 billion last year to identity thieves. In most cases, it was not online ID theft. Simpler things like lost wallets and dishonest clerks.
The good news is that the average amount of each crime and the amount consumers pay out of pocket per crime is down.
Javelin's Jim Van Dyke tracks identity theft cases. Freeport, Minnesota, 74-year-old Melvin Punsack's prize bull knocked him down, chased him up a snowpile. Police did the only thing they could think of to make the bull sit down so the man could get away. They shot him with a taser. After a short time, the bull got up, shook it off, and headed out to pasture. Wall Street, the Dow lost nearly 10 points, NASDAQ off a fraction. This is CBS News.
Hi, I'm the foreman of a construction company. We just added Aflac as one of the benefits we provide for our employees. At no direct cost to the company, Aflac makes our foundation of benefits even stronger. My crew is so happy with Aflac, they're going on and on about it.
Hammer out the specifics. For more information, call 1-800-99-AFLAC or go to AflacForBusiness.com. American Family Life Assurance Company of Columbus. Aflac.
Staples is happy to announce that you can now recycle any ink or toner cartridge and receive $3 back in Staples rewards. That's right, any ink or toner.
How about Canon?
Yes.
What about HP?
I did say any.
Epson?
Yes.
Brother?
Yes. Any.
Lexmark?
Yes.
What about Dell?
Oh.
Now save the easy way. Recycle any brand of ink or toner cartridge at Staples and get $3 back in Staples rewards. That was easy.
Recycling limit of 10 per calendar month per customer. Limit 1 Staples rewards account per address. Visit staplesrewards.com for full details.
If you want to get there on time, it pays to fly when the weather is fair.
On-time performance declined dramatically in December, with not quite two-thirds of flights on time, compared to 8 in 10 on time in November. Snow, especially around Christmas, gets the blame. Yet compared to a year earlier, on-time performance was a little better. For the year overall, Hawaiian Airlines had the best on-time record, American Airlines the worst. December was also bad for mishandled bags, almost twice the rate of November.
CBS's John Harchie in Washington. The mother of the woman who had octuplets is giving her daughter the business over it. Angela Suleiman says her daughter's actions were unconscionable. She already had six children. Why would she do this, she asked. Nadia, to be sure, is not raising the first six. Her mother's doing that, but they do all live together, and the rooms of the house in pictures look like a little tornado went through. California health officials, meanwhile, are investigating the fertility clinic that implanted what they thought were just six embryos. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
You know, every time I stay with a Econo Lodge or Roadway Inn hotels, I feel like I'm doing right by my wallet. See, after just two separate stays at any Choice Hotel, I earn a free night at up to 1,500 hotels through the Choice Privileges Rewards Program. Yep, all it takes is two stays to stretch my travel dollar with a free night. So thank you, Econo Lodge and Roadway Inn, from me and my wallet. Book at 800-4-CHOICE or choicehotels.com.
Freenet requires 6,000 or 8,000 points. Requires two stays booked at choicehotels.com or 800-4-CHOICE. Valid 25 through 4309. Details at choicehotels.com.
All right, construction crews. Everybody ready?
Ready in Chicago.
Montgomery.
Honolulu. Oh, who's in Honolulu?
It's Tim from Boston. I just got transferred to Hawaii.
Winky good weather they got here.
Buy one Motorola i576 phone for $69.99. Get up to four free with Sprint, the fastest national push-to-talk network. Call 1-800-NEXTEL-9. Only on the Now Network. Fastest based on initial call setup time. Offers for eligible business accounts only. See Sprint stores for availability. Ends 4/18/09. Subject to two-year agreement. Up to $36 activation, $200 early termination fees. Credit approval and deposit per line. Restrictions apply.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to a fresh edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. I was in Chinatown over the weekend, and I think I saw Van Morrison, but I'm not sure. Got a lot to talk about, great people to talk with today. Stay tuned.
People moving out, people moving in. Why? Because of the color of the skin. Run, 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 but you sure can't hide. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Both for me, and I'll set you free. Grab on, brother, grab on.
Vote for me, and I'll set you free. Is that Zippy Livni's campaign slogan? Big election in Israel on Tuesday. It'll be very interesting to see just how hard right the electorate goes. That's what's predicted. We will see. Using voices on today's program, as usual, that you don't often get in the corporate media. Craig Eisendrath will join us in a moment. We're going to talk about nukes and non-proliferation, weapons and space. Later this hour, powerful progressive voice, columnist and writer David Sirota will return to our program. He's really been on target lately. We're going to talk to him about his theories about Leo Hendry, who is the anti-capitalist, a very wealthy man who objects to a lot of what's been going on in our economy over the last few years, the deregulation and the thievery, and his connections to Tom Daschle, and if that helped bring Daschle down. We'll also talk about Sirota's comments on some lobbyists who are there in the Obama administration despite the new policies and the mess with the GOP stimulus package. Also on today's program, a powerful voice for peace in the Middle East. As we continue our coverage of the humanitarian crisis in Gaza, Barbara Lubin from the Middle East Children's Alliance will join us at the beginning of next hour. And she's the one who contributed the chilling anecdote, the Sophie's Choice, where a Palestinian mother was confronted by Israeli troops and told to pick five of her 10 children. And if she didn't, they would. And I don't know exactly who made the choice, but the grisly outcome is that five of her children were shot and killed in front of her. We'll talk to Barbara about that and other issues related to Gaza, including the Lebanese humanitarian supply ship that was turned back by the Israeli Navy over the past weekend. Colonel Steve Kleiman will join us. He's an Air Force reservist, a former interrogator, and he was referred to us by Dr. Phil Butler, the outspoken critic of torture who spent almost 8 years in the Hanoi Hilton there in North Vietnam back in the 1960s. We'll bring you a portion of President Obama's first news conference that is occurring about 5 o'clock Pacific time today. And then we're going to get a report from Amna Akbar. She is an attorney from New York University, part of the team on the plaintiff side of the rendition case that was heard in a San Francisco federal court today. And the very disappointing news is that the Obama administration is continuing the Bush policies regarding what they call state secrets. And this affects the ability of 5 people who were held at Guantanamo Bay to sue the they weren't all held at Guantanamo, let me correct that, but they were all victims of what's called extraordinary rendition. This is what the policy that caused Leon Panetta to eat his words and retract his testimony under fire from Republican Senator Kit Bond on Friday. And it is very, very disappointing to me to hear that there appears to be no new policy in this new administration, at least not in the hearing that surfaced in San Francisco today. Craig Eisendrath returns to our program. He co-authored Bush League Diplomacy with Mel Goodman, and he also is the author of To Enter Jerusalem, which was published back in 2008. Craig, welcome to our program today.
Well, thanks very much for having me.
There's a lot to talk about. First of all, I'd like to touch with you on nuclear nonproliferation issues. Just over this past weekend, we learned here in the West that AQ Khan, or Han, as they would pronounce it in Pakistan, was essentially relieved of most of the elements of his house arrest. He's been holed up for 5 years, and he's not allowed to travel widely, but other than that, he seems to be largely unrestricted in his ability to communicate, write articles, and talk to people. Appears to have been widely, I guess they've loosened up the tethers on him. And he's the man most responsible for recent episodes of proliferation of nuclear technology to Iran and North Korea in particular. And it's always steamed me the way the Bush administration stressed WMD as the reason why we had to go into Iraq. But they weren't concerned about WMD when it came to blowing up the identity of Valerie Plame Wilson or when it came to dealing with AQ Khan. They essentially allowed our puppet Musharraf to put him under this house arrest, but there were no real sanctions for the true damage that he did.
Well, AQ Khan is one of the most dangerous people on the planet. One of the things that makes him dangerous is that the Pakistani government is very disorganized. And there are basically semi-autonomous units in the army and in the intelligence service called the ISI, which have direct contact with nuclear weapons. That is, they can possibly siphon off nuclear weapons, nuclear technology, without the central government having much control of it. And Khan has no morals and is could easily do exactly what he did before.
Mm-hmm. He also has allies in Europe. The Tinner family in Switzerland has been under investigation, and there were legal proceedings against them. But they appeared to be allied with him in the distribution of blueprints and other technology related to nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
And we've seen the United States in this bizarre approach to these issues basically just sit back and watch, Craig.
I think one of the reasons we did this is because we needed Pakistan support in the fight in Afghanistan. And because of this, we gave up quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think is appropriate for the U.S. to demand from Pakistan related to AQ Khan?
I think it's quite appropriate to say to arrest him again and put him under really strict house arrest and deal with him as an international criminal,
mm-hmm.
because that's what he is.
Well, we'd probably call him a war criminal, but we're concerned that people might apply those labels to us.
Well, in some ways they fit, you know. I mean, our policy is, particularly over the last 8 years, has been pretty messy.
Mm-hmm. Do you see Obama improving? He made it a signature of his brief career in the Senate to focus on proliferation issues and trying to secure stockpiles of nuclear weapons in different parts of the world. But I haven't seen in his appointments to date anybody on his national security team who reflects that critical interest.
There hasn't been, but I think what you're going to see with the Obama administration is a lot of central control. That is, I don't see the cabinet independently operating. I see rather them doing what Obama wants them to do.
Mm-hmm.
What's at issue with the nonproliferation is this. We've got the comprehensive test ban to sign, and I think we will. We've got this treaty on the deweaponization of outer space to sign, and I think we will sign that.
Mm-hmm.
We have an agreement to negotiate with the Russians, particularly on the de-alerting of nuclear weapons. We've got, between us, we have almost 5,000 weapons on full alert. That is, within 15 minutes, they can be launched.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, in 1995, we launched a scientific satellite out of Norway. The Russians thought we were trying to destroy Moscow, and we came within about 3 minutes of full nuclear exchange.
Mm-hmm.
So that's serious.
Yes,
and that needs to be negotiated. We also need an international regime for the control of fissile materials. And that, again, I think Obama is connected with that, is going to act, and I think we're going to get something. And finally, I think we're going to get a treaty on the deweaponization of outer space, and we're going to get, I think, much, much better implementation of the 1968 treaty.
Mm-hmm.
That is, we're going to start fulfilling our side of the bargain by getting rid of nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm. Craig Eisendrath with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Billy joins us on the line from KRXA territory. Hi, Billy.
Well, hi, guys. I mean, you know, you fell right into it, and then you didn't pick up on it. Why not an even trade? Why not con one criminal, which we really do need to get control of, because, as you point out, he can be making phone calls that consist of teaching people how to, you know, start another reactor.
Yes, the blue wire. It's the blue wire.
Give them Bush. We'll take con, because, you know, it's funny, but the reality is that Pakistan is infinitely more a problem than Afghanistan could ever be for us.
I agree. Yeah.
I think, you know, interesting, Joseph Sirianni mm-hmm. says that Pakistan is the most dangerous country on the planet.
Yeah. Well, I agree. And
the Muslim bomb, that's why.
Well, it's that and also the instability, the threat that they feel from India, and the extent to which the interests of generals and religious extremists align. And they, of course, created the Taliban, which is was intended to create a buffer for them on the Afghanistan side so they wouldn't have to worry about that. And, of course, it's come back to bite them and us in a very big way. Billy, thank you for your call. And, Craig, in the next segment, I want to talk more about weapons in space and also the missile defense plans for Europe.
Mm-hmm.
But in particular, your thoughts related to Obama's intention to put more troops into Afghanistan. We're hearing a lot more pushback. Senator Feingold and Congressman McGovern quoted in news articles just today. And I'm pleased to see that because for the longest time there was a deadly silence, particularly from Democratic leaders, as Obama enunciated, yep, we're going to get out of Iraq and put more troops into Afghanistan.
Well, I think Afghanistan is a much more dangerous part of the world for us. In a sense, you know, what we've done in Iraq is get ourselves involved in a very complex civil war. And there's no winning that kind of thing between the Shiites and the Kurds, the Sunnis and the different factions. We have just been in a complete mess since we got in there in 2003. In Afghanistan, we have a clear opponent, the Taliban. Obviously, we need to get better support from NATO than we've gotten. There are a number of NATO countries involved, but many of them are refusing to fight. They say, well, we'll deal with peaceful areas, but we won't deal with areas which require real military intervention. We've got to insist that they do their job.
Mm-hmm.
I think also I think we've got the problem with the Taliban that they have, in fact, occupied the country. I mean, this is not a small group. This is not a disorganized group, but a very highly organized, well-financed group that's going to require the kind of troop increase that Obama's talking about.
We're going to take a break and return with Craig Eisendrath here on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you have a question or comment, you can call me now, toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372, the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, this is Stephanie Miller. You're listening to the station that encourages you to think for yourself. What a concept. AM 540 KRXA.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a moderate dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Summer in Santa Cruz, you just can't beat it. It's time for friends, family, fun, and food. Whether it's an afternoon barbecue or a dining room banquet, it all begins with getting the best quality food at the best prices. For nearly 70 years, Shopper's Corner Market has delivered both. Shopper's Corner is the oldest family-owned and operated independent grocery store. It's where the locals shop.
I like their meat department. That's what I buy here.
They have a good organic selection.
Things you can't find other places.
Enjoy the friendliest service and fastest checkout at Shopper's while taking advantage of the everyday low prices on USDA choice meats, fresh local seafood, and produce.
Their produce is great. Actually, I shop around quite a few different places, but I always come back here because they have the best.
The variety of stuff you find here, you don't find other places, and the service.
Shoppers has a vast assortment of cheeses and specialty foods, along with one of the best wine selections in the Monterey Bay area. Shoppers Corner, on the corner of Soquel Avenue and Branson 40 in Santa Cruz, or visit them online at shopperscorner.com.
I shop here because of the fact I live around the corner.
Shoppers Corner, it's where the locals shop.
Tomorrow Matters is back on air Sundays from 10 to 11 a.m.
Green Talk Radio for the Central Coast.
I'm Deborah Lindsay.
And I'm Spencer Lindsay.
Join us as we dazzle you with local solutions to environmental issues.
We'll be talking about things like climate change,
green building,
alternative energy and transportation,
water conservation,
organic farming,
and bicycles,
and a whole lot more.
Join us on KRXA 540 a.m. Sunday mornings at 10.
Hello, KRXA listeners. This is Sylvia Waldrop-Quarles, president of the Monterey County Branch NAACP. We're excited to announce our annual Life Membership Awards Dinner being held on Saturday, February 21st from 6 to 10 at the lovely Embassy Suites. KRXA's own Hal Ginsberg will be receiving the NAACP's Spirit of Partnership Award. Come to the dinner to show your support on February 21st. For tickets, call us at 394-3727. Tickets are $75 each. Again, call us at 394-3727. Yes, that's 394-3727.
Wide open, Robinson for a three off the inbound. Two for two, Duncan Robinson. Four on three up the left side, Jamal Boykin, the open floor. Goes in and Vidy and scores.
This is the voice of the Golden Bears, Roxy Bernstein, inviting you to join us for another exciting season of Cal basketball right here on your home for the Bears.
Stanford will be at the Haas Pavilion Saturday, February 14th at 1:30. You can hear the game right here on KRXA 540.
And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on 24 minutes into the hour. We're talking with Craig Eisendrath, the writer and commentator on nuclear and other issues. And, Craig, over this last week or so, Joe Biden has been traveling, and he gave some hints that we might be dialing back from the Bush-era commitment to a... Pardon me, it's 2 weeks now with that cold of 09. To our commitment to deploy a meaningless missile defense array in the Czech Republic and Poland against a non-existent threat of a missile assault from Iran. And this is one of those things that I think is a boondoggle, wastes a lot of our money, and it unnecessarily rattles the cages of the Russians.
I think you're absolutely right. I think it was just something in their face. It was just an assertion of power. And it's particularly silly because we've got a missile defense system that doesn't work. It hasn't worked ever since we started researching this out. We've spent over $170 billion on missile defense, and we don't have a system that works. We cannot distinguish a decoy from a warhead. And the decoys can be very simple. They can be just simply balloons, and we can't tell the difference.
Mm-hmm.
So that we're dealing with a system that doesn't work. We're dealing with a installation in Czechoslovakia and Poland, which is an affront to the Russians. There's no purpose in it. We should definitely negotiate out of it.
Well, I hope we will, and at least the early signals from Biden seem to offer that possibility.
It wasn't, I think so.
It wasn't very concrete, but that's the way I want to read into it. Now, what is the status of the U.S. attempts to build space-based weapon platforms, lasers and other devices?
Well, we've spent about several, probably $10 to $20 billion in research on these weapons. And in a sense, we're ready to go. We're ready to deploy. The question then is a political one, whether we go ahead or not. There's no real advantage for us in doing this, because if we do it, we're going to test these weapons, and if we test them, they're going to create debris. And the problem with debris is this, that, for instance, in low Earth orbit, a piece of debris travels at 17,000 miles an hour, which means that a 10-pound piece of debris can hit a satellite with the power of a truck. And we've got satellites up there. We cannot afford to waste. These are weather satellites, communication satellites, positioning satellites, scientific satellites. A lot of our economy and a lot of our scientific research depends on these. These will all be at risk if we start peppering outer space with weapons.
And have we tested these on Earth in a way that gives us any confidence that they would work, or is this just another ruse like the Star Wars missile defense scheme?
It's another ruse because, one, we don't know what would work, and also for many purposes they're about somewhere between 15 and 25 as expensive as things we can do on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if you want to bombard the Earth, it costs you about 20 times as much to do it from a circulating satellite as to do it from the ground.
Hmm.
And the accuracy from the ground is much better.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really no purpose in this except that it fattens the the wallets
mm-hmm.
of a number of corporations like Boeing and Raytheon and Lockheed Martin.
Yeah.
These guys would love this. Love to do this kind of thing.
And, Craig, in 30 seconds or so, is there any shift in position by the incoming Obama administration on space-based weapon deployment?
There is. My sense is that Obama made a speech during the campaign which said he was against them, and I think he will follow through on it.
All right. Very good, sir. Well, thank you for joining me today. I always appreciate talking with you, Craig.
Thanks very much for having me.
Craig Eisendrath here on the Peter B. Collins Show. David Sirota will join us next. There's a lot to talk about. The stimulus package, the posture of Republicans, Obama's failed post-partisanship approach, and who the heck is Leo Hendery? Why should you care? That's all coming up next here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood Files, sponsored in part by Welcome Rewards from Hotels.com. I'm Charles Osgood. When Boston, like many American cities, decided to ban smoking in workplaces, restaurants, and bars 6 years ago, an exception was made for spots like Churchill's Cigar Bar.
We carry primarily premium handmade cigars.
Harry McDonald's family has owned that place for more than 30 years now.
It's legal. If you're an adult, you can make a rational decision about it.
But Boston's Public Health Commission has decided to make what it sees as a rational decision. Since you can't discriminate against job applicants who don't want to have to breathe in cigar smoke, ergo, you can't have cigar smoke. They're phasing out all smoking bars.
What we are saying is that if you personally smoke, we should reduce the exposure your smoking habit may have on somebody else, for in particular on workers.
More after this.
Hotels.com gives you a free night for every 10 nights you book. We're basically rewarding business travelers for doing what they already do. It's like giving you a blue ribbon for wearing a tie, a gold medal for shaving, and a lifetime achievement award for putting on pants. So, stay 10 nights in one hotel or one night in 10 different hotels, any combination, and get a free night. Welcome rewards from Hotels.com, the smarter way to book. Join online or call 1-800-2-HOTELS.
Some exclusions and restrictions apply. See site for details.
That's Jared.
Hi, I'm Jane Seymour. My mother used to say, always keep your heart open. It's the only way to give and receive love. Those words inspired my new Open Hearts jewelry collection.
And now, you are invited to see the Open Hearts by Jane Seymour jewelry collection at Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry. Priced from just under $40 to $1,200.
When your heart is open, love will always find its way in.
Find a Jared store or shop anytime at Jared.com.
As CBS News correspondent Randall Pinkston has reported, the decision to expand on the Massachusetts workplace smoking ban has a statistical justification.
The Health Commission points to a study of the state's workplace smoking ban. Since it took effect 4 years ago, there are an estimated 577 fewer than expected heart attack deaths each year.
Effective today, all tobacco sales are banned on college campuses and in pharmacies. Gregory Lamb, who owns Sullivan's Pharmacy, understands why.
As a pharmacist, it's obvious we shouldn't be selling cigarettes.
Cigarettes have been only 1 to 3% of his business there anyway. Boston becomes the second city to do this, San Francisco being the first. But now, says Cynthia Hallett of Americans for Non-Smokers' Rights,
we're bound to see other cities follow suit. It is a big deal. I mean, you shouldn't be able to buy tobacco products from your health service provider.
Places like Churchill's Bar are allowed to phase out in 10 years. For owner Barry McDonald's family business, that's not much of a future.
This is my livelihood. This is what I do. You know, I have a family. I have two children, a wife, a mortgage, like a lot of other people.
The Osgood File. Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Yeah.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, 33 minutes after the hour. We first connected with David Sirota a few years back when he was at the Center for American Progress. He's written several books, most recently Hostile Takeover and The Uprising. He's a syndicated columnist whose work now appears weekly in the San Francisco Chronicle, and you can read all about him at davidsirota.com. David, good to talk with you again.
Hey, good to talk to you.
You've really been hitting some very important notes, and I value your voice in the current context because you're expressing some critical thinking and sharp criticism of some of the early moves of President Obama and the administration. And I really appreciate that because there are many people on the left who are kind of holding their fire, saying, well, let's just see how all this sorts out. But I think that just as the right is not relaxing in these early days, neither should the political left. And so I applaud the work that you've been doing.
Thank you.
I want to start off going back an entire week to the point when Tom Daschle was hanging on by a thread in the twin nominations for healthcare reform leader and HHS secretary. And you were one of the first to make the connection between Obama, a man named Leo Hindery, and the apparent rejection of Rahm Emanuel and the insiders in the Obama administration of some of the critical thinking of this successful businessman who is sharply critical of the deregulation, the lack of enforcement, and the runaway greed in our financial system.
Right. Well, Leo Hindery was John Edwards' top economic advisor on the presidential campaign, and became a an economic advisor to the Obama campaign after Edwards dropped out, and was a guy who ran for DNC chair, successful venture capitalist, and obviously a good friend of Tom Daschle.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the Daschle nomination was I think ended for the right reasons. I mean, I was sorry to see Tom Daschle go, only because I think that he had his heart in the right place and would have had the legislative heft to pass something very good and progressive on health care. And I don't think he's made I'm not absolving him from what he did. But the more interesting story and less reported story was the fact that the guy he was working with in the private sector, Leo Hindery, was sort of he was sort of demonized during this process, and whether you think it was right or wrong, the story that was unreported was that Leo was not hired in the administration after serving as an economic advisor to Obama, not because of his connection to the Daschle brouhaha, but basically because of his economic ideology.
Mm-hmm.
He is one of the few wealthy political benefactors who's actually spoken out and said that our country is totally unequal in terms of wealth. He has funded organizations that have spoken out, not just on liberal or progressive issues, but specifically on progressive economic issues. You don't get a lot of people with money to actually stand up and talk about it, much less contribute to organizations that try to raise these issues. And so, you know, the Politico had a story where it basically said one of the reasons why Hindery wasn't hired in the administration was because he had been a guy who had taken on Wall Street. And that's really the underlying story here. If you look at Obama's economic team, it is a team dominated from top to bottom by Wall Street insiders.
Yeah.
And Hindery was the perfect example of how this is not a team of rivals in the Obama administration. This is a very ideologically pure group of people and pure for Wall Street.
Well, and they all seem to be either official or unofficial members of the Goldman Sachs Alumni Association.
Right.
And this gives me...
An important thing that, again, is not very well talked about. You know, Goldman Sachs now, it had Treasury Secretary Bob Rubin under Bill Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
It then had Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson.
Yep.
The Deputy Treasury Secretary, Neel Kashkari, is the guy running the bailout as a Goldman
mm-hmm.
Sachs guy. Josh
mm-hmm.
Bolton, the Bush Chief of Staff, is a Goldman Sachs guy. Tim Geithner has worked very closely with Goldman Sachs as the head of the New York Fed. And this is one of the biggest investment banks in the world that's getting a lot of bailout money. The CEO was the only guy in the room with the Federal Reserve Chairman and the Treasury Secretary when they decided to push for the bailout money. So this is a firm that epitomizes the crony capitalism that we're dealing with right now, and it is right in there inside the Obama administration, unfortunately.
And Goldman Sachs took a bailout. They now want to return it. They were allowed to convert from an investment bank to a regular old bank so they could get covered by the Fed and by deposit insurance. And so they really seem to be the alpha dog here that is dominating this process. And David, I'm really concerned that Obama is too captive to these points of view. And, you know, we've heard all about the BlackBerry, which is to enable other friends of his to send him messages so he's not encapsulated in the bubble. But the guy who talked about a cabinet of rivals has not brought in any dissenters on the critical economic and foreign policy teams.
That's right. And you know, you even saw it with his board of economic advisors outside the administration that was announced on Friday. You know, you have out of 15 people, you have two representatives from organized labor, just two. You got four corporate CEOs, four people directly from the finance industry, one Bush SEC chairman, and one Reagan economist, Martin Feldstein.
Mm-hmm.
This is not, again, a team of rivals. I mean, I think the idea behind, the concept behind a team of rivals is a good one. You know, you can have ideological battles inside the administration that would then allow the empirically right policies to sort of bubble up. That's not what's going on. I mean, you have, if you could pick an ideologically pure, ideologically cleansed team, it would look exactly like what Obama has picked. And I think that's been a real disappointment, and I think it has real ramifications for policy.
Yeah.
Right? This is why the bank bailout, the new bank bailout that we're expected to hear about tomorrow, is not one that moves towards nationalization. This is why the bailout that was originally pushed just gives away lots of taxpayer money to banks with almost no strings attached.
Mm-hmm.
This is why you have a stimulus bill that's 42% tax cuts that we know don't create the same amount of jobs as the spending. So this is the old ways of Washington, unfortunately, right now, under the guise of a new administration. It's very disappointing.
Yeah. Now, coming back to the Daschle withdrawal, many of us have been clamoring for Howard Dean, and once again, it appears that Rahm Emanuel is the roadblock here because they disagreed over Dean's 50-state strategy when he was running the DNC. To me, that's a trivial issue compared to what Howard Dean could bring to the health care debate. And parenthetically, I'm a single-payer guy, and I want to see that that's at least addressed and discussed. I know it's that Obama's not a single-payer supporter, and I don't expect it to be the ultimate end of this process. I'd like to see it as an option or at least something that is fully explored and something that we work toward in any reform package that gets passed.
Well, I think, look, I would love to see Howard Dean be the HHS secretary. I think that would be great. I mean, I am less concerned with who the person is and more concerned with what they represent. So the reason I say I'd love to see Howard Dean is because Howard Dean, I think, represents some real progressive stuff on healthcare. That said, I also think that, you know, one of the people being mentioned is Rosa DeLauro from Connecticut. I think she's very progressive on healthcare issues. So, you know, I would encourage us all not to get bogged down with the individuals and focus on the policy. I mean, this is my problem with Obama's economic team is not that it's the person Larry Summers or the person Tim Geithner.
Mm-hmm.
It's that Larry Summers and Tim Geithner represent and have pushed for policies that are antithetical to the campaign, the progressive campaign that Obama ran on.
Yeah.
So I think with the HHS secretary, my hope in a meta kind of way is that what we get in there is somebody who really does have something of a progressive record on healthcare and not somebody who's been a spokesperson for the health industry.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And likewise, it's not a personality thing, but Catherine Sebelius, the governor of Kansas, she came out of my hometown of Cincinnati from the politically powerful Gilligan family, and I have respect for her political instincts, but every indication is that she's a very safe, centrist, corporate kind of Democrat, and that's what it took to get elected in Kansas. But I'm a little uncomfortable with the idea of her being promoted into this post because she doesn't bring the political chops at the federal level that Daschle had and that I think Dean has developed through his presidential campaign.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think there is something to be said for somebody who does have some congressional oomph, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, DeLauro and Dean, they have different levers of legislative power that I think they could use. But I certainly think that if you're comparing Sebelius, Dean, and DeLauro, that Dean and DeLauro would be just better suited for the job.
Mm-hmm. Now I want to turn to a nominee that I just heard about over the weekend. His name is Mark Gitenstein, and he has been working as a lobbyist for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce for the last 8 years, helping his firm earn more than $6 million in fees. And he's going to be in the critical position of evaluating judicial and U.S. attorney appointments. And this was where Karl Rove managed the choke point or checkpoint, however you like to look at it, that politicized the Justice Department and that also was a funnel for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce to promote its packing of the courts with pro-corporate justices. This was their deep reaction to that big tobacco settlement about 12 years ago. And we're seeing it play out in states as disparate as Alabama and Wisconsin, where the Chamber of Commerce is very actively running Supreme Court justices who back their corporate agenda.
Oh, it's a real problem. I mean, the Supreme Court, if you look at the stats, now takes on more business cases than it does cases dealing with other issues. And I think you're right. This is a troublesome appointment. If it happens, to put, you're right, a corporate gatekeeper at really in front of the judiciary, potentially in front of the judiciary system, and right embedded in the justice system. It's a real problem, and I think people have a misconception a little bit of what the Supreme Court does and doesn't do. I mean, again, I want to stress, most of what the Supreme Court does is deal with business regulation. We tend to think of the Supreme Court as dealing mainly with, you know, abortion and social issues. That's just not the case. And, you know, if this administration oversees a period of time where that Supreme Court and the rest of the judiciary gets corporatized even more than it has been, you know, it's going to set back the country for another decade or two.
Mm-hmm. David Sirota is with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You can read his column weekly in the San Francisco Chronicle. And he's got a website with all his information and a Twitter account, all that stuff at davidsirota.com. As we continue, David, I want to talk with you about the debate over the stimulus package, the president's news conference coming up a couple of hours away, and also the issues related to the something else. I'll remember when we continue. David Sirota is my guest here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way in the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
Hi, this is Sheila Gale with The Sheila Show, Saturdays from 3 to 5. For the next few weeks, college basketball will be airing during my show. So please, if you tune in on Saturdays and hear basketball, you can hear me on Sundays from 3 to 5. The Sheila Show, where we talk about everything and help you get through life's toughest challenges. The Sheila Show, brought to you by Cornerstone Wellness Center on Cass Street in Monterey. Remember, if you tune in and hear basketball from 3 to 5 on Saturday, I'll be on Sunday, 3 to 5. The Sheila Show.
Come here, Max. What's wrong? What? Oh, I get it. A rough day?
Hi, I'm Dr. Annetta Richmond inviting you to Natural Veterinary Therapy in Pacific Grove, the peninsula's new holistic veterinary medicine clinic featuring a wide variety of natural treatments and remedies for common ailments. We also specialize in acupuncture, chiropractic, and physical rehabilitation using an underwater treadmill. Natural Veterinary Therapy, Lighthouse Avenue between 14th and 15th in Pacific Grove. Our environment is unique. Clients comment on how calm and caring it is for their pets and themselves. At Natural Veterinary Therapy, our goal is to help your pet heal from within. So think for yourself and think for your pets. Visit our website at naturalveterinarytherapy.com or call 655-0501. That's 655-0501.
Meow. Whiskers, I'd better call Dr. Richmond for you, too.
Meow, meow.
Hi, I'm Audrey Williams.
And I'm Melvin Williams.
Check out our new show, Holy Hip Hop on the Block, every Saturday from 10 to 12 noon, right here on KRXA 540 AM.
Check us out.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. We're talking with journalist, author, and columnist David Sirota, S-I-R-O-T-A, at davidsirota.com, if you want to get more information. And David, I remember what was on my mind before the break. I wanted to get a little more from you on the outlines of this latest bank bailout package that Tim Geithner is supposed to unveil. They've delayed it to allow the vote on the Senate vote on the stimulus to occur first, I guess, to try not to distract people. The only element that appeals to me that I've heard so far is that in lieu of nationalization, they're calling for more capital infusions, and they want some private capital in there. I've been talking about this recently, how the way that capital is sitting on the sidelines waiting for taxpayers to absorb all the losses before they come back in has had me greatly concerned. So that's one element that makes a little bit of sense, but frankly, I think they ultimately will have to nationalize the banks.
Well, I think that's true, and I think if and when that happens, people need to remember that it's not a radical step. I mean, this is a step that countries, industrialized countries like Sweden and Britain, have already taken at times when they faced situations like this, and it's temporary nationalization to restructure the bank, get rid of the management that created this crisis, and then essentially reprivatize the bank, all to protect taxpayers. What we've got now is the worst of all worlds. We're not nationalizing the banks. The bad management is able to stay where it is. Taxpayers are throwing money down a hole. And we get none of the benefits. I think we'll ultimately be forced to nationalize temporarily some of the banking system. And I think the longer we delay, the more taxpayers get fleeced. It's as simple as that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's again why this attempt to reach across the aisle to Republicans, this effort to try to calm the markets through the continuity of the Geithner appointment, I think all these have very limited short-term effect, and we're seeing the diminishing returns on the post-partisanship gambit.
I think so, too. You know, I Obama made two sets of promises. One was basically a detailed policy agenda. $1 trillion worth of spending, et cetera, et cetera. Another was to be, quote-unquote, bipartisan. Those two sets of goals have come into conflict. When you push a progressive agenda, the Republicans have shown that they'll do anything to obstruct it. If you push a progressive agenda, in other words, you can't get bipartisanship in Washington. Now, you certainly can get bipartisanship out in the country. I mean, you poll issues, and Republicans and Democrats support a lot of what Obama campaigned on in terms of his policies. So Obama has to choose now, you know, which is more important, the agenda he campaigned on or the political aesthetics and cosmetics of bipartisanship. I mean, I think that what we need right now is the best possible policy. And that every dollar wasted in pursuit of the cosmetics of bipartisanship is a dollar that we need to go into the best possible programs to fix our economy and create jobs. And I'm just not sure if Obama sees it the same way yet.
Well, and there's this maddening effort to take things off the table. When the Republicans got irritated about family planning money in there, oh, well, let's take it off the table. The mall will take it off the table. Well, they've been so accommodating that the Republicans continue to negotiate a single direction. They demand, and they really don't make any concessions.
They make no concessions at all, which is incredible because this is a party that was just destroyed in the election. And I actually think politically that what this is doing is this is allowing the Republicans to prematurely rebuild themselves. The Democrats, in continuing to kowtow to another party that got so badly drubbed in the election, that has so little official legislative power in the Congress, Democrats continuing to kowtow to them makes the Democrats look pathetically weak. And it makes the Republicans look far stronger than they actually are. And I think that is going to help rejuvenate the Republican Party in a way that it should not be able to rejuvenate because its policies are so out of step with the country.
And David Sirota, a little over an hour from now, the president will serve up his first primetime news conference. And my expectation is that he'll be kissing some Republican butts again because he needs to get this piece passed. He can't just take a hard line against them because we've got these maddeningly wavering so-called centrist Democrats like Ben Nelson who are in there mucking things up. And it's a real mess, and I believe that Obama needs to assert political control over his own party, his own caucus, and he needs to confront the Republicans and dare them to adopt the Limbaugh mode of wanting him to fail.
Yeah, and I would agree. And I think that we saw Obama start to do a little bit of that. We saw him during that speech to Democrats, the House Democrats, start to take a more confrontational tone. I mean, I don't want him to be confrontational just to be confrontational. He needs to be confrontational and stand up for what he campaigned on. And I think he'll have more success if he did this. Look, I think that, at the end of the day, we'll look back on this and say Barack Obama's big mistake, and I always thought this, was that he started from a position of compromise. You never start a negotiation already caving in to what you perceive your opponents are going to want.
And David, this has been going on. The Democrats were negotiating with themselves last fall when the Pelosi-Bush TARP package was originally put together.
That's exactly right. We see the perils of that. You know, the perils of that are that you end up compromising away the very guts of what you're pushing.
And so how do you think we get through this? Is this a replay of the early Clinton? It wasn't called stimulus. It was an investments package that ultimately failed and really took the wind out of Bill Clinton's sails in that very critical first 100 days.
Yeah, well, I think the way we move forward is all of us out here, need to continue pushing our members of Congress to support the biggest and most robust package. I mean, this is not over by a long shot. There's going to be a conference committee where a lot of this is going to get ironed out. And, it could be a conference committee where all the bad stuff is put in or all the good stuff is put in. And so we're really, I think that if to put it into a basketball metaphor, we're ending the third quarter here and we're heading into the fourth quarter. And it's, everyone knows the fourth quarter is the most important.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how the Democrats run this conference, too, because we saw the way the Republicans did it when they were in control. And I think it'll be fascinating to see the Pelosi-Reid dynamic in this particular exchange.
It will. And my hope is, is that, especially Pelosi, because I think she's shown more of a penchant to do it, that Pelosi, you know, asserts her power. You know, she's got, the Democrats in Congress are not, they don't have to take orders here. You know, I mean, the president is the one who ultimately has to decide whether to sign whatever gets to his desk. But in the lead up to getting something to his desk, you know, the Democrats in Congress, they're not innocent bystanders here. They've got a lot of power and they ought to use it.
David, thank you for your voice. Keep
talking.
Thanks
for having me, Peter.
Okay, good to talk with you. David Sirota, visit his website at davidsirota.com. Coming up next, Barbara Lubin from the Middle East Children's Alliance. She was in Gaza recently, and she'll tell us about it.
Has your computer been slowing down? Are you having problems with your email? Or when you go to the Internet, is your browser taking so long to load that it seems like the worldwide wait? I'm Luke Ford, CEO of My Computer Works. We help people just like you with computer problems you can't fix. With one easy call, we can help you get your computer working the way you want it, speeding it back up, making sure you can send and receive emails, and making the Internet fun again. You'll speak to a U.S.-based technician who knows what they're doing, who can usually fix your computer on the very first call. If your computer's been slowing down, you can't get your email to work, your Internet's taking forever, or if you're not sure what's wrong, but your computer's just not working the way you want it, call My Computer Works, and we'll help you fast.
Call My Computer Works right now, toll-free, 888-629-9618. Tell them Peter B. sent you, 888-629-9618. One more time, 888-629-9618.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
As the Senate moves toward a stimulus vote, the president takes his case to the people.
We've had a good debate. Now it's time to act.
Alex Rodriguez admits he used performance-enhancing drugs.
I was young. I was stupid. I was naive.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. It's a crucial week for the economic stimulus plan. President Obama, after a campaign-style trip outside Washington today, holds a news conference an hour from now.
I'm Peter Mayer at the White House. The nation's economic mess is expected to dominate President Obama's first primetime news conference. The president delivered this economic package hard sell today in Elkhart, Indiana, where the unemployment rate is more than 15%.
We can't afford to wait. We can't wait and see and hope for the best.
The ultimate message is aimed at Congress.
We can't posture and bicker and resort to the same failed ideas that got us into this mess in the first place.
The president hopes to sign a new economic package into law 1 week from today. Peter Mayer, CBS News, the White House.
Late today, the package cleared a major hurdle in the Senate. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss has that.
President Obama's stimulus plan survived by a whisker in the Senate, needing 60 votes to break a filibuster, getting 61, with the help of three moderate Republicans who broke with their party's solid opposition. One was Susan Collins of Maine.
There are some who believe that no action is better than the action that has been proposed. I could not disagree more.
The measure at about $800 billion provides tax cuts for most working Americans, special help for people buying cars and houses, and hundreds of billions in spending on everything from new roads to student aid and help for the unemployed to pay for their health insurance. All too much, says Republican John Kyle.
We are not being wise in the way we are spending this money.
But final passage tomorrow is now assured, after which the bill must be reconciled with the House version. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Now this.
Two drivers, two very different stories heading home on a dark evening.
I hit the open road.
I hit the open road.
A deer popped out of nowhere. I panicked.
I saw a deer in the road. I slowed down.
I jerked the wheel. I wish I could have seen it.
I drove around it and was home before the next song on the radio.
With Silver Star headlights from Sylvania, you'll see more of the road ahead. Remember, headlights dim over time. Replace them before you are left in the dark. Visit your automotive retailer and choose the whitest, brightest light. Silver Star headlights from Sylvania.
I'm about to present to you a straightforward commercial for GEICO, the third largest personal auto insurer in the country. Last year, over 3 million drivers switched to GEICO, and GEICO received a customer satisfaction rate of 97%. Standard & Poor's has consistently awarded GEICO a AAA rating for financial strength. This is usually where I'd say something cute or clever, but like I said at the beginning, we're keeping this straightforward. Goodbye to you now.
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you hundreds on car insurance.
New York Yankees star slugger Alex Rodriguez says the story is true. He was among 104 players who tested positive for steroids when Major League Baseball tried to gauge the extent of the problem in 2003.
I did take a banned substance, and, you know, for that, I'm very sorry.
A-Rod told ESPN today that he used the juice when he played for the Texas Rangers. He said he felt tremendous pressure to perform after being signed to a 10-year, $252 million contract and isn't even sure what he took.
It was such a loosey-goosey era that's I'm guilty for a lot of things. I'm guilty for being negligent, naive, not asking all the right questions. And to be quite honest, I don't know exactly.
The one player that everybody looked up to as far as being the guy who was going to be able to break Barry Bonds' record and wipe him off the out of the record books has now also admitted that he's a steroids cheat.
New York Daily News sports writer Bill Madden.
A-Rod's pursuit of the home run record is now as counterfeit as Bonds' was.
Accused swindler Bernard Madoff has made a deal to settle the civil charges brought by the Securities and Exchange Commission. CBS News chief legal analyst Andrew Cohen says this makes a plea bargain with federal prosecutors more likely.
The key to all of this is that Madoff has agreed to all of the allegations in the civil complaint against him, which means that there will be some sort of fine and restitution at the end of the process, whenever that happens to be. It's a deal that ought to put the criminal case against him on a faster track.
The SEC complaint quotes Madoff as telling his two sons that his investment firm was one big lie, basically a giant Ponzi scheme. The head of enforcement of the SEC, Linda Thompson, plans to leave the agency and return to the private sector. Thompson and her staff have been harshly criticized for failing to uncover the Madoff fraud years ago. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Hi, I'm the foreman of a construction company. We just added Aflac as one of the benefits we provide for our employees at no direct cost to the company. Aflac makes our foundation of benefits even stronger. My crew is so happy with Aflac, they're going on and on about it.
Hammer out the specifics. For more information, call 1-800-99-AFLAC or go to AFLACforBusiness.com. American Family Life Assurance Company of Columbus. AFLAC.
Staples is happy to announce that you can now recycle any ink or toner cartridge and receive $3 back in Staples rewards. That's right, any ink or toner.
How about Canon?
Yes.
What about HP?
I did say any.
Epson?
Yes.
Brother?
Yes. Any.
Lexmark?
Yes.
What about Dell?
Oh.
Now save the easy way. Recycle any brand of ink or toner cartridge at Staples and get $3 back in Staples rewards. That was easy.
Recycling limit of 10 per calendar month per customer. Limit 1 Staples rewards account per address. Visit staplesrewards.com for full details.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Did you catch U2 on the Grammys? Radiohead was my favorite. Later this hour, a former military interrogator, Colonel Steve Fineman, will join us.
And you know it's time to go through the street and driving snow across the fields of morning lies in the distance. And you wonder for the time to heal, desire time.
Joining me now is Barbara Lubin from the Middle East Children's Alliance. She's recently returned from Gaza, where she was a witness to the damage done by Israel's 23-day war on that part of the Palestinian world. Barbara, welcome to our program today.
Thanks, Peter.
Tell me where you went and just the quick sketch of when you were in Gaza, please.
Sure. I was. I went on January 9th. To Cairo, where I spent a week and a half, almost 2 weeks, working, pulling together aid. We shipped in an ambulance. The Middle East Children's Alliance had raised money here in California to purchase an ambulance with an operating theater in it. We shipped in 4 tons of much-needed pediatric medicine for children. We shipped in 2.5 tons of powdered milk for children and truckloads of paper, crayons, coloring books, magic markers for kids, and about 30 wheelchairs for the hospitals. And every few days we would go to the border between Egypt and Gaza and see about our ambulance, trying to get it in. And finally it got in, and then we proceeded to try and get in ourselves, which was very, very difficult. The border was packed with journalists from all over the world trying to push their way in.
And you came in through Rafah, the Egyptian border?
We came in through the Egyptian border, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And once you did gain access, Barbara, what did you see there, particularly in the southern Gaza Strip? This was the zone where many Israeli airstrikes occurred, and where, legitimately, their effort was to open up the tunnels that are used to bring supplies in that they view as a violation of the Israeli blockade.
That may be legitimate, but it killed 1,300 people, a huge number of them children, as a ways of opening those tunnels is not very legitimate.
No, I don't rationalize that in any way.
Yeah.
I'm only trying to offer that you know, I don't support the Israeli rationale. I don't believe that this is an appropriate use of military force in a populated area.
I agree with
However,
you.
I can see the military targets that they see relative to those tunnels that are used to resupply Hamas.
Yeah, except that the targets that I witnessed were elementary schools and preschools and mosques and community centers. And it, so many, many of the victims, it was just their homes, you know, one neighborhood after another completely demolished. And in some of the buildings, the demolishing, there would be 4 apartments, one on top of each other. And in some of the places, people were still underneath. They were dead, but they couldn't get them out. It was a scene out of a horror movie. And in one neighborhood, I mean, I'll never forget this. There was, when you got out of the car, there was this smell of death. There were dead chickens. There were dead horses, dead cows, and, of course, so many dead people. It was astounding. You know, I've got a pretty big mouth. I was really speechless. I had witnessed a lot of things. I have been in and out of Iraq since 1991, delivering medicine and food to children, and have been in and out of Palestine since 1987. So it's not like I'm a novice, but I have to say this went beyond the pale, what I found this time on this visit. It was shocking. And the bombing also took place on the Egyptian side. We were there for the bombing when we were in Egypt, right at the border, and then also when we went into Gaza. It was a horrifying experience to see such pain and utter destruction.
Now, Barbara Lubin, one of the charges that is leveled by the defenders of Israel is that Hamas uses women, children, schools, hospitals, and mosques as shields. And I understand that argument, but I don't believe that it justifies this military incursion using fighter jets, helicopter gunships, white phosphorus, tanks, mortars, and troops on the ground. And the argument falls flat for me because Israel knows the conditions in Gaza. After all, they have entrapped this population in this small strip of land up against the sea where they maintain a naval blockade.
And so...
When people talk about Hamas using, you know, women, children, and facilities as shields, number one, do they have a choice? And number two, doesn't Israel have a choice? Just as a police SWAT team makes a choice not to shoot a hostage taker because it could injure the hostage, him or herself.
Well, I met with hundreds of people. And I particularly focused in on the child care centers that were bombed and the schools that were bombed and the hospitals that were bombed. And I asked them these kinds of questions, you know, were Hamas fighters hiding there? And especially in the schools, they said, absolutely not. It was the only place, after their homes had been bombed, it was the only place where families could run, those that were still alive or not too injured and couldn't move. So the story from the people on the ground there is very, very different than what the Israelis tell. And to be honest with you, Peter, I have experienced myself, watched with my own eyes on several different occasions, when Israelis have come in particular into the Haisha refugee camp in the Bethlehem area where I spend a lot of time. And I have watched late at night, peeking out of the window on the fourth floor of our guest house, when Israelis have gone and taken young boys and young girls and used them as human shields, going from house to house. So for them to turn around and talk about the Palestinians using their own people as human shields, when in fact they themselves do this, I just find it ludicrous. I really do. And I'm not excusing. I'm not saying it's okay for Palestinians to kill unarmed civilians. Of course, it is never right to kill unarmed civilians. I think we all agree on that. But my experience has been just the opposite. It is, in fact, Israeli soldiers who have used the Palestinian youth as their shields.
We're talking with Barbara Lubin. You can visit her website, MECA, MECA for Peace. That's the Middle East Children's Alliance, MECA, MECA, F-O-R, peace.org on the web. Barbara, we're in touch with many people. Sami Habib is a journalist and a Gaza citizen who sent us dispatches almost every day during the 23 days of conflict. Anna Baltzer is an American Jewish woman who
was... I know her well. She's wonderful.
Yes, was traveling in the region. And Anna passed along to us an email from you about a story that occurred in the Bourij camp in the middle of the Gaza Strip, where a woman lost apparently half of her children. Could you tell us how it occurred and what went on? And there was some reporting that may have been slightly inaccurate about some of the details, but the general thrust of the story appears to have been borne out in fact.
Well, I'm the person who told the original story and then who went back and researched it and found out the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
And when the story was told to me, it was told that the Israelis said to the woman, she's in the middle camp in Khan Yunis, that she had to choose 5 of her 10 children to make a gift to Israel, and that she had to choose among them which would die. When I repeated the story to several people who were taking down my testimony while I was in Gaza, and, you know, there was a lot of gunfire around. There was a lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the story that was told to me was told out of goodwill, and it had also been on the radio there. But I went back because there was such interest in that particular story. And I had a very good friend of mine, a teacher who lives right in that middle area, research the story. And the real story turned out to be that the Israelis phoned this family, talked to the mother, and said, tomorrow you will die. We will not kill you, but you will die of sadness because we will kill your children. And in fact, the next day, they rocketed her house, and 5 of her 6 children were murdered, and she also was murdered. And the only survivors are the father and one child.
Mm-hmm.
And I have their names. I have, you know, where they are. I have their ages, and the story can be completely checked out, which, in fact, I then sent out the second story, what I call the official story.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just one of thousands of stories that I heard that were in, they were shocking.
And Barbara, what you just affirmed in one detail there is that the Israelis were using what we would call PSYOPs, psychological operations, yeah, of calling people on the telephone and playing games with them, manipulating them, telling them things that weren't true, trying to ferret information out of them. This seems beyond inhumane.
It not only is it horrifying, but you know, then going to the funerals and seeing the numbers of children that had been murdered, it was, and to see the burns on their face from white phosphorus, mm-hmm, and then to go into hospitals and see the, and to talk with the heads of Shifa Hospital, which is the main government hospital in Gaza City, and to have meet with doctors who said, we have never, ever seen wounds like we are seeing this time. We are trying to figure out what kind of new weapons have been used here. And then they would take us and show us young people, old people, the numbers of people that lost their limbs. They've never had that before. You know,
Barbara, we need to take a break. I'm sorry, but we will continue in a moment. Barbara Lubin is with us from the Middle East Children's Alliance. Again, their website, Mika, M-E-C-A, for peace.org. You can call in. 888-5-PETER-B is our number here at the Peter B. Collins Show, produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill.
KRXA 540. Progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, inexpensive Mandarin and Cantonese food prepared to order every day. The May family invites you to savor their authentic Chinese dishes and tasty soups like congee and wonton noodle. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.75 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget Jim's is tops for takeout and catering too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Just because gas prices are low doesn't mean our troubles are over. Mother Nature's getting hot under the collar, our economy is in the toilet, and we're spending billions overseas to fill our tanks. Both kinds. Did you know local people have sold locally made fuel on the Central Coast since 2002? At the Green Station, our biodiesel is ASTM approved and is made from restaurant fryer oil collected right here. Did you know that electric cars were first built in the 1830s? Almost 200 years later, and our government still has plenty of money for oil wars, but not enough to jumpstart our renewable energy economy. 70% of all car trips in America can be done in a neighborhood electric vehicle. This will help save our planet and save you money. Zen neighborhood electric cars are at the Green Station now, and they can be charged by the sun. From local biodiesel to electric cars, bikes, and scooters, renewable transportation and a more peaceful world are just a call away. Call the Green Station today in Santa Cruz at 831-425-9100. Major credit cards are now accepted. That's 831-425-9100. Again, that's 831-425-9100.
I'm Glenn Sadowski from Optimal Health Acupuncture in Monterey. Did you know that over one-third of all Americans have tried alternative medicine for relief from chronic pain, depression, asthma, and many other disorders? That acupuncture is safe and effective and has been in use for thousands of years? Or that traditional Chinese medicine treats not only your symptoms but the actual root causes of disease? At Optimal Health, we offer acupuncture, lymphatic, deep tissue, and hot stone massage, have a full Chinese herbal pharmacy, and for acupuncture, we accept insurance. Reclaim yourself at Optimal Health at 655-3208, where clients take a proactive role in their well-being, make informed decisions, and create healthier lifestyles. Call Optimal Health Acupuncture today at 655-3208 or on the web at OptimalHealthMonterey.com. Optimal Health, where you'll receive good medicine with great results. Think for yourself at Optimal Health.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following The Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after The Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Get Good afternoon, everyone. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic report. Right now in King City, on the northbound 101, just north of Canal Street, we have a brush fire in the center divide. And moving up to Monterey County on Highway 68 at Toro Cafe, there's been a two-vehicle collision. An ambulance is responding. Also, one of the vehicles is disabled in the left-hand turn lane. On Highway 1 at mile marker 38, there's been a rock slide. The rocks are blocking the northbound lane and part of the southbound lane, so expect some slow traffic there. Caltrans is working on clearing the rocks right now. They should be cleared in the next 15 or 20 minutes. And taking a look at Santa Cruz, we've got a collision with no injuries on Lee Road at Route 129. Well, that's your AM 540 traffic and weather. Have a fantastic afternoon, everyone. We will be right back with the Peter B. Collins Show.
So easy to see. People everywhere just want to be free. Listen, people, listen, that's the way it should be. Deep in the valley, people got to be free.
I'm Peter B. Collins. For me, it's simple. I support Israel's right to exist. I support the human rights of the Palestinian people. And I deeply oppose the ongoing occupation of Gaza and the sharp limits on mobility and personal freedom in the West Bank. We're talking with Barbara Lubin from the Middle East Children's Alliance. Again, their website, MECA, Mika for Peace, if you'd like to get more information. Here's Andy dialing in from New York. Welcome, Andy. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
And I'm Ms. Lubin as well. Thank you for what you're doing and getting the word out. Just wanted to reiterate the supporters of Israel. Senator Chuck Schumer here in New York gave a speech before the Israeli embassy while all this bombing was going on, saying that the texting of messages was done to make sure that the Palestinians got out of harm's way. You know, and this was just a wonderful thing that was going on. And also, I was wondering, is there verification of also of civilians being texted and given phone messages to get out of their homes, and then snipers picking them off? Like you mentioned, Peter, I think a family of three and a 16- or 17-year-old girl being shot and her father.
Yes, and they were trying to leave their home after they'd been warned, and they were heading for a hospital that came under attack. Barbara, can you confirm those events?
I've heard stories like that over and over again. Can I, you know, document it and confirm it? No, but I heard it from the words, from the mouths of Palestinians who saw it and who went through it.
Mm-hmm. And the use of messages, Israel claimed they were trying to help people avoid the next attack, but it does seem that people were manipulated and entrapped, at least on some occasions.
Well, the reality is, I actually have a photograph of one of the messages that was dropped by a drone airplane telling people that, you know, that they're going to be bombed, that they have to get away from their homes. And in fact, people in the particular area where I was, they left their homes and they ran and they went to the schools, and then the schools were bombed. There is no place to hide. There are no air raid shelters. There's no bunkers. Like, in fact, there are in almost every Israeli home. There's a room that you can go into and is supposedly a bomb-proof room. And I'm not saying that that justifies, you know, shooting bombs at them. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's outrageous. But the fact is that there was no place to run and hide. And when families did leave their homes and run and try to hide, they bombed the schools. They bombed the hospitals. They, mm-hmm. you know, so where were they to hide?
Yeah, Andy, thank you for your call. Barbara, we have been monitoring and supporting the work of the Free Gaza movement.
Yes.
They've made many efforts to send humanitarian aid and and doctors and other human rights monitors from Cyprus to Gaza. And one of their boats was rammed by an Israeli gunboat, and that story was captured. We saw it on CNN.
Outrageous.
Others have been intercepted in international waters and turned back. A Lebanese freighter with tons of supplies was intercepted, and in this case, the Israelis allowed the supplies to come ashore, but not the people.
Right.
What is your take on how the world community should be responding to the very serious humanitarian needs in Gaza right now?
Well, actually, there has been a huge response on parts of the world. There was an enormous amount of aid coming in from the Arab world. I met and spoke with the Venezuelan ambassador to Cairo, and we were both at the border and spent a day together just chatting, and they had brought in enormous amounts of aid, which was coming through Egypt into Gaza. And I think that they acted appropriately. Some of these countries acted very few of them, but some of them, you know, they threw the Israeli ambassador out. They threw the staff out of their country. They said, you are not welcome here while this is going on. And I think that the Arab countries had to do the same. I knew that Qatar, that they did that. I think that there's an enormous amount of aid out there that is coming in, and certainly more is needed. The rebuilding has to be huge, but, you know, there's been a commitment of $1.5 billion from the Saudis to rebuild homes.
Barbara, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for your work, and thank you for the reports you sent while you were there in Gaza.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it very much. MECA for Peace, the Middle East Children's Alliance. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The stimulus everybody agrees on. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. A full-page ad in today's Wall Street Journal, signed by hundreds of economists, states, "We, the undersigned, do not believe that more government spending is a way to improve economic performance." They argue that, contrary to what we were all taught, government spending did not pull the U.S. out of the Great Depression of the 1930s. Same argument Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell made over the weekend.
The big spending programs of the New Deal did not work. In 1940, unemployment was still 15%. What got us out of the doldrums that we were in during the Depression was the beginning of World War II.
So FDR's New Deal didn't work. What ended the Depression was World War II. But now, what was World War II? It was a massive spending program, and it created a huge debt. And how is that debt paid?
Are you a businessman? Well, your profits are going to be cut down to a reasonably low level by taxation. I do not think that any American citizen should have a net income in excess of $25,000 after payment of taxes.
That would be $314,000 today. So there, that's the stimulus everybody agrees actually worked. Massive spending, salary limits, huge taxes. Strange, isn't it, that we have an economic system where the one stimulus everyone agrees on involved blowing up bridges rather than building them. Now this.
Whether you run a small business or a big enterprise, you face similar IT challenges every day, including network security, user productivity, network and application performance, and data storage and email retrieval. That's why over 70,000 businesses like yours count on Barracuda Networks to solve these challenges.
Right out of the box, without IT expertise, at a price that any business can afford.
Call 888-ANTI-SPAM for a free 30-day trial of any of our security, productivity, or storage appliances.
That's 888-ANTI-SPAM.
Or see for yourself at Barracuda.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio.
Hi, I'm Debbie LaSala from LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli at 250 Casa Verde Way in Monterey. Buy Right has been a family-owned Monterey Bay treasure since 1938. Hungry for delicious sandwiches? Join the many LaSala regulars who love our tasty, hearty sandwiches prepared with fresh-baked Palermo bread. Eat in or grab on the run at LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli. Whatever your choice, we at LaSala's will greet you with Mon Pa hospitality and truly awesome meals. And remember, sandwich trays are also available for meetings and parties. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli is located on the west side of Highway 1, exiting at 250 Casa Verde Way and going just past the first stop sign. For more information, call 372-6824. That's 372-6824. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli, a Mon Pa treasure at your service for 70 years.
Sometimes things just make sense.
Sure, like buying a scooter when gas prices go crazy.
Or putting sharp business equipment in your office.
How does that make sense?
It makes sense to have the number one digital copier in America working for you, right?
Sure.
Well, that's how it makes sense.
I get it, but...
Here, try this.
Since 1981, this family-owned business has been about one thing, results, which is why Tri-County Business Systems is a Sharp dealer. Sharp is technology-driven, featuring OSA, Open Systems Architecture. You can customize applications that promote efficient workflow. And because they're built to last, your total cost of ownership is reduced for long-term results. If you're a QuickBooks user, Sharp's OSA system allows you to quickly scan directly into your client's folder right from the machine. So call Tri-County Business Systems at 758-1474 and learn more today. Tri-County Business Systems, 758-1474. Solutions that connect with you. Tri-County Business Systems.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
At the beginning of the next hour, we'll bring you President Obama's first primetime news conference here on the PBC show. And I hope the press corps has some questions for him about our torture policy and the Panetta confirmation comment.
From the heavens, it was easy to tell. It was love from above that could save me from hell. Shit fire in a soul, it was easy to see how the devil himself could be pulled out of me. There were drums in the air as she started to dance. Every soul in the room keeping time with her hand. And we sang, hey, oh, hey.
And following the Obama news conference, we'll get a report from attorney Amna Akbar. She is involved with the plaintiff team with the case here in San Francisco regarding five individuals who were subjected to extraordinary rendition, and that's the euphemistic term for kidnapping. And this is a source of controversy. It was discussed again with CIA Director Designate Leon Panetta from our backyard in Carmel Valley, who was testifying 2 days on the Hill last week. And joining me now with some first-person commentary on interrogation and torture is Colonel Steve Kleinman, Air Force Reservist. Colonel, welcome to the program today.
Thank you for having me.
And I just want to tell you, I don't know a lot about you, but you come highly recommended. Phil Butler, I think, is our mutual friend. And Phil was on our program recently talking about his thoughts about torture based on his own experiences at the Hanoi Hilton. Tell us a little bit about your work in the military and what types of interrogations you've conducted, Steve.
Yes, I have about 25 years of experience as a military intelligence officer. All of it has been focused in three primary areas. Human intelligence, which incorporates interrogation, and I'll go into more detail on that in just a second. Also, special survival training, meaning resistance to interrogation, mm-hmm. and finally, special operations. My real-world experience, I was an interrogator and a human intelligence officer in Panama during Operation Just Cause.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the chief of a combined and joint interrogation team. That means all the services as well as several other nations.
And just a quick question. Did you deal with Noriega or underlings?
Actually, his very top assistant. I didn't talk to Noriega directly.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But it was what we wanted actually was coming from the people who were the general officers and colonels that were very close to him.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So we had the experience doing that. And then in Desert Storm, I was one of the most prolific interrogators. I conducted more interrogations and wrote more intelligence reports from those interrogations than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And then more recently,
and what level of detainees or prisoners of war were you dealing with?
Up to and including the equivalent of a two-star general.
Uh-huh.
So division commanders, very, very senior people, also colonels and generals in the Republican Guard.
Mm-hmm.
Which, as your viewers may, or your listeners may recall, was Saddam Hussein's closest and most politically trustworthy group of military officers,
mm-hmm.
and the ones that had the most information.
Now, talk a little bit about this term human intelligence, because the average citizen understands what the words mean, but may not really understand the scope of humint when it's used in our clandestine services.
Well, I appreciate that question because it's like the word strategy that is bandied about, and or people quoting from Sun Tzu, you know, some well-known passage, and not understanding what it means. Human intelligence precisely means information that is collected directly from, as the name would apply from humans, as opposed to technical intelligence, for instance, collecting electronic signals and signals intelligence or images from various platforms that would be imagery intelligence and other forms. So this is really dates back to antiquity. I mean, the earliest form of intelligence collection, and I mentioned Sun Tzu, he talks about that the wise sovereign, the only possible means for understanding gathering intelligence, he used understanding and intelligence interchangeably, was not from divining spirits, but from talking to men, people who had direct access to the information.
Mm-hmm. And what is the reliability of human intelligence?
Reliability is a very, very important element of it. They call it asset validation. They call it credibility assessment. But the key is people can say things that can be categorized in the following way. It could be truthful, fully truthful. It could be partially truthful. It could be deception. And within each of those three categories, there are several subcategories. Somebody could tell you what they believe to be true. I mean, they absolutely believe it to be accurate, and it turns out that their memory is false. A good example of that is eyewitness testimony. Elizabeth Loftus and other psychologists have gone into great detail.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who wish to lie, and you can lie by concealing, meaning if I don't ask you the right question, you don't offer up the fact that you know.
Yeah.
Or I could ask you a direct question, and you fabricate. You make up information to hide that information.
Mm-hmm.
But the reliability is key. Number one, you have to study somebody's access. Would they have direct access to that information?
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if you were to tell me about the Golden Gate Bridge, yet I could determine that you've never seen the Golden Gate Bridge, you only heard from other people or read in a book, then your veracity or reliability would be questionable.
Well, and let me throw out a real-world example, Curveball. This is the guy that the Cheney people believed when he spun yarns about mobile weapons labs and what was then hyped into an imminent threat from Iraq to the United States because of his information. Yet we know that the facts don't line up with his assertions, and once we follow the chain of custody of Curveball, we know that American intelligence officers never actually laid eyes on this guy or got in the same room with him. It was all received information from third, maybe even fourth parties.
Absolutely right. I think Curveball would be an ideal case study for young intelligence officers entering the field to study how not to handle a case, because it's just fraught with mistakes, not the least of which is never fully establishing the person's direct access to the information. Secondly, you have false corroborations. And what happened was there'd be one group of intelligence officers from America and elsewhere who reported information obtained from this source, and then another group from a different agency reported information from that same source, but not it wasn't made clear that it was from the same source. And so the analysts at the end get what appears to be corroborating information, but it's the same story from the same individual. Obviously that's not corroboration at all. But what that leads to is a philosophical underpinning, if you will, which is an intractable part of understanding intelligence. And it's something to talk about the difference between truth and true, T-R-U-T-H and T-R-U-E. Truth is based on belief, what we really want to be true. An example from history would be, at one time, truth was the earth was flat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we know at no time was the earth ever flat, and when we came to that realization that it wasn't, it suddenly popped into an orb. It was never anything but the shape it is now, but it was believed to be so true that people, it was a truth that people lived their lives based on. Now, what was true, again, is that it was always round. Galileo dealt with the idea or the challenge and paid the price for the difference between what some people wanted to be truth and that it conflicted with what was true. Now, in Curveball's case, racing to the contemporary scene, is there are people who wanted what he had to say, what he apparently had to offer, to be true.
Yep.
But it wasn't. But it matched up with their truth, and so once that it hit that register and said, it corroborates what we want to be true, there's no reason to pursue it any further, because all you risk is finding out that maybe he was fallible, and he was.
We're talking with Colonel Steve Kleiman, Air Force Reserve, and a former interrogator here on the Peter B. Collins Show. And, Steve, next let's talk about Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. Bush and Cheney have both bragged that, yes, they approved the application of waterboarding, which I don't mince words, it's torture. And I believe that other methods of torture were used on this man. I have no sympathy for KSM, yet the fact that we tortured him really causes many additional problems. One is we can't believe what he says, because he has acknowledged or accepted responsibility for some actions that he couldn't possibly have been involved with. And yet, when it's convenient, for example, he claims responsibility for the death of Daniel Pearl, and this is one of the cases where I haven't seen enough evidence to prove that he was directly involved, yet it's something that people in the United States, particularly some of our political leaders, wanted to hear, and therefore they ignore the inconvenient things that he said that could not possibly be true, and they also then claim that torture works, because look, he admitted to things that we want to believe he did.
Well, you've really encapsulated the complex problem and the insidious problem that we're facing right now. The case of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed could serve as yet another case study as we look back in these times. The use of waterboard, and I agree with you that it is torture. Malcolm Nance, a colleague of mine who was a resistance to interrogation officer with the Navy for many, many years and is an expert on waterboarding, we testified together before the House Judiciary Committee, and he, like you, didn't mince words either. For instance, he said it wasn't simulated drowning. It is drowning.
Mm-hmm. It's only simulated if you stop.
Right, exactly. Now, in the case of KSM, you're right. He provided information which tracked with what we believe to be true, but he also provided information that is probably, if not certainly, untrue. For example, as he pointed out, there's a lot of information to suggest he was nowhere near Daniel Pearl at the time of his tragic death.
Yeah.
So, again, going back to your earlier question about reliability, if somebody answers correctly to 5 questions and incorrectly to 3, you have to look at that and say, was that faulty information, faulty memory, or fabrication? But whatever it is, you need to find out what it is before you act on the 5 pieces you believe to be true. If somebody were to testify in a court of law and they purposely lie, it's very difficult to say, well, let's just listen to the part that was true.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of times they throw the entire testimony away.
It's called impeachment.
Exactly. And here's the other part with Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in terms of, did it prove that waterboarding works? Absolutely not, because, first of all, there's no objective evidence to study, okay, what other methods were used? Did we get useful information? Could we have obtained more information through other means, which I believe is the case? But from a geostrategic perspective, what we're left with, if you remember when word was not just leaked but then officially issued that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed said the things that you mentioned, you know, that he was a mastermind of 9/11, other things, and also that he killed Daniel Pearl. You know, first of all, 9/11 was a horrific event. But rather than the world saying, oh, my God, what a monster, the world almost, it was a collective yawn saying, well, of course he would say that because he was tortured. And why did everybody believe he was tortured? Because, sadly, because he was in the hands of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about how, in just a short period of time, that whole geopolitical perspective had shifted from probably 10 years ago. They said, well, it must be true because of all countries, the United States would never torture. Now there are people who believe it's systematic, it's policy, and it's we're in it for the long run.
And Cheney still thinks it's a good thing.
Well, you know, it's to I don't mean to assassinate the former vice president's character.
Well, I'm not going to defend him, so go ahead.
Right. Well, I have no doubt he believes that to be true, but the challenge is, while he, I'm sure, is no doubt an expert in certain elements of politics and public policy, what have you, He just is not an expert by any stretch on what is necessary to get information from human beings under custodial conditions.
And, Steve, to boil it down, I think he believes that in dealing with crazy mofos, you've got to position yourself as an even crazier mofo. And somehow he thinks that's going to work. I need to take a break, but when we come back, I want to get your comments on Leon Panetta's commentary before the confirmation panel at the Senate last week. We're talking with Colonel Steve Kleinman, Air Force reservist and a former interrogator. He's been there. He knows what works and what doesn't. We'll continue our conversation. You can join us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540.
Good afternoon, this is Fia with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather report. In King City, we have a couple of traffic hazards. The first one is on the southbound 101, just north of County Road G16, and the hazard is in lane number 1. Also on the northbound 101, just north of Walnut Avenue, unfortunately a dog has been hit there. The rock slide that I told you about earlier on Highway 1 at mile marker 38, Caltrans is still working on cleaning up those rocks. You may have some delays there. Heading on up to Santa Cruz, we've got a traffic hazard on Fairview Avenue at Irwin Way. In weather, it's partly cloudy out and very chilly. We've got highs in the low 50s and are expecting temperatures to fall into the low 30s tonight. So definitely bundle up. Rain's also on the way. That's your KRXA traffic and weather. Peter B. Collins is coming right back.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Cruz. Come listen to the new Jennifer Cruz Show, Saturdays at noon, where we will get into it, I-N-T-U-I-T. We'll talk about intuition, emotions, and passions, all the invisible aspects of each and every one of us that nobody talks about. The Jennifer Cruz Show is made possible by Weiland Galleries in Carmel and Water Me Well Inner Healing Apparel. Visit watermewell.com. See you Saturdays at noon on the new Jennifer Cruz Show. Remember, Saturdays at noon, only on AM 540. Get into it.
On the next Quantum Leap, sweet spots. That's where the police go to give you a ticket. They go to their sweet spot. If you've gotten an unjust ticket and want to know more about how to fight it, call and give us your story on the Quantum Leap, Saturdays at 9 p.m. and Monday at 8. Sweet spots, all next week on the Quantum Leap on KRXA 540. Think for yourself. Sweet spots, unjust and not so sweet.
8. We live next door to each other.
7. Our kids are classmates.
1 in 8 Americans is struggling with hunger.
6. I work at the gas station.
Including millions of children and seniors.
5. We went to high school together.
4. I went to summer camp with your son last year.
Someone you know is in need.
3. We speak at PTA meetings all the time.
2. I park your car every day.
Who's the 1 in 8 in your life that needs help?
1. We've worked together for years.
You can make a difference through Feeding America and its nationwide network of more than 200 food banks. Take action at feedingamerica.org/1in8. A public service announcement brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
To help fight hunger in the Central Coast and to find your local food bank, visit feedingamerica.org/1in8. That's feedingamerica.org/1in8.
The Peter B. Collins Show, 9 minutes in front of the hour. We continue with Colonel Steve Kleinman, Air Force Reservist, 20 years of experience collecting human intelligence. He's asked a lot of questions, and he's gotten a lot of answers. And, Steve, before the break, I, you know, boiled it down to street talk here of one crazy mofo and that Cheney thinks that we just need to act crazier. But to put a little more intellectual point on it, I believe that we frame this in a mistaken way, to imagine that we can put rational constructs around what I regard as irrational behavior. So when you have a jihadist who seeks martyrdom, then it's very hard to imagine that even the pain and suffering that you would inflict through the enhanced interrogation techniques that I call torture would have the desired effect. And yet it seems that they really don't get that disconnect.
Well, I have to agree with you. I think from a strategic perspective, most detainees find themselves in U.S. custody or in custody under any regime, whether it's the Middle East, whether it's in Asia, South America. There's a certain expectation today, and it has been for a long time, that there's going to be physicality. There's going to be some degree of physical, emotional, and or psychological pressure or abuse inflicted on them. And so a lot of times they've steeled themselves for it. When they do experience it, what actually occurs is a solidifying of their resistance, of their absolute hatred for the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
What they're ill prepared for is to encounter somebody who is rational, who is reasonable, who shows some degree of enlightened cultural finesse, can show respect without necessarily agreeing, but can understand and respect other cultural mores, religious values, religious intentions. And the key is to remain rational, because it is a rational calculus. An interrogation is very, very, very much like a negotiation. And that is, you know, both sides have information to offer the other.
Yeah.
And you know, with certain degrees of persuasion, a certain amount of trading, a certain amount of understanding. And just like negotiation theory has found that both sides get the most from that negotiation when, instead of being competitive, they find some area of collaboration. The same thing for an interrogator. Instead of pushing the detainee to the other side and making it an adversarial relationship, my first goal, my primary goal, is to make it somehow more collaborative. And can I do that with a jihadist? You know, the key is, if we remove the labels, if we remove the language and cultural divide, there's just two people in that room.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as it's two people, there is a chance for connection. It's just when we begin to dehumanize, when we begin to label and mislabel and decide that irrationality needs to be dealt with irrationality, we end up where we are today.
Here's John in Eureka. Welcome, John, listening to KGOE. Go right ahead.
Yeah, just Peter B., I think we've gotten used to, or we're getting used to abnormality, and that militarism, from thinking, starting from Eisenhower, warning us against it, is deeply irrational. I knew, you know, the H-bomb was just a flowering of militarism, and I knew somebody that worked on the Manhattan Project, and he went to see, How I Learned to Love the Bomb, you know I'm talking about, the
sure.
film.
Uh-huh.
He was in Berkeley, actually, North Berkeley, and he said, what are you people laughing about? These guys are really like that. And militarism has got us by the throat. And there's not, I don't think there's a single difference between militarism and fascism. We've gotten used to war as a way of life, just like in Israel. It's like, Israel is like this little cooking pot where we play around with weapons and all kinds of things.
All right, John, you make a good point, and war has become a profit center, and I think there are some very serious issues we could explore there. Thank you for bringing them up today. Steve, I want to ask you about the testimony of Leon Panetta. He wants to be the CIA director, and prior to this process, he was full-throated in opposition to the use of torture. And he's had to backpedal a little bit under withering questioning from Senator Kit Bond of Missouri and perhaps others. And it really bothered me when he acknowledged that extraordinary rendition kidnapping was used to snatch certain people and send them to places where they would be tortured. And we have very good evidence on the public record about this, yet he retracted his comments under, you know, this questioning from Senator Bond. And he also has asserted that he doesn't want investigations or prosecutions of those who may have violated the law. Now, I do understand that some people were following orders, and I would prefer to see those who gave the orders prosecuted before anybody who followed them. But isn't it very clear to any experienced military interrogator what's torture and what isn't?
Well, I have to say, a very qualified, perhaps. My experience is the interrogators who are the very best in the business, the ones who consistently are successful in getting not just a bit of information, but the full range of the information that individuals have, are of one mind, and that is some sort of rapport-building, thoughtful, systematic, patient, culturally aware approach. It just works over and over again. Mm-hmm. But there are others who haven't been very successful, and they keep going to the well over and over again, and their well is filled with physical approaches, and it's hard. You know, often because they're not very skilled, they feel like the only way, you know, the only tool in their toolbox has some sort of pressure attached mm-hmm. to it, and so they think that's necessary.
And just about 40 seconds remaining, but the other thing that really offended me was this use of the ticking time bomb scenario, and Panetta actually, you know, bit into it.
Well, you're right. I wish that would just disappear from the debate because it's the statistical improbability, and we focus on that. And nothing changes because of the time. If coercion doesn't work, and I contend it doesn't, mm-hmm. under a situation where time constraints do not exist, it will also be ineffective in those scenarios.
Oh, but it works on the Fox Entertainment Channel on 24.
Well, see, that, and I'll tell you, 24 and movies and books inform policy yeah. more than science. I watched the recent movie.
Steve, I'm sorry. I'm out of time. I don't want to cut you off, but I have to, and I'd love to talk with you again. Thank you for joining me today.
Okay, well, thank you for having me.
Colonel Steve Kleinman on The Peter B. Show.
Bonjour, this is Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. I've created a special offer for you to try my French wines made from organically grown grapes. For a limited time, when you buy two bottles, you get one bottle free, and I'll even pay for the shipping. I know you love the taste of these handcrafted wines from my ancestors' lands, especially if you care about our planet and your health. Imagine, you can have organic French wine delivered to your door for less than $12 a bottle. I've made this free wine and free shipping offer available to you because I believe you'll become a lifelong customer once you've tasted our wines. The French Bouquet Collection at ecowine.com includes my red Chateau Véronique from Languedoc, my white Viognier, and my Blanquette de Limoux sparkling wine. All French, organically grown, and affordable.
For free delivery, click on ecowine.com/Peter B. That's ecowine.com/...
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. Starting in moments, it's his first primetime news conference as President Barack Obama.
The primetime news conference is one of the ultimate gavels on the president's bully pulpit. Tonight, President Obama will use it to hammer away at the need for his economic recovery plan.
We've had a good debate. Now it's time to act. That's why I'm calling on Congress to pass this bill immediately.
Mr. Obama speaking today in Elkhart, Indiana, where unemployment is more than 15%. Tomorrow he takes the message to Fort Myers, Florida, an area hard hit by foreclosures. Peter Mayer, CBS News, the White House.
The president is going to get his economic stimulus package.
On this vote, the yeas are 61. The nays are 36.
CBS's Bob Fuss on Capitol Hill.
Facing strong Republican opposition, President Obama's stimulus bill just squeaked by. It needed 60 votes to survive a Senate filibuster. It got 61. Ailing Democrat Ted Kennedy came in for the vote, and three Republicans gave the bill the votes it needed. Maine Senator Snow and Collins and Senator Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania. There's another vote required tomorrow, but this one was the key one that means this bill will pass.
A-Rod.
In 2007, on CBS's 60 Minutes, Alex Rodriguez made a blanket denial.
Have you ever used steroids, human growth hormone, or any other performance-enhancing substance?
No. But now on ESPN, the New York Yankee slugger is saying something very different.
I did take a banned substance.
Rodriguez says he used performance-enhancing drugs for three seasons, 2001 to 2003, when he was with the Texas Rangers.
I was naive, and I wanted to prove I was worth, you know, and being one of the greatest players of all time.
Rodriguez says he has not used performance-enhancing drugs since then. Steve Futterman, CBS News.
Looking back at those powerful years in Texas, CBS News correspondent Armin Katayan.
He said he wasn't sure what he was doing, but whatever he was doing certainly was working because he averaged 52 home runs and 130 RBIs during that three-year period from 2001 to 2003. and that's the best in baseball.
Reaction on the streets of New York, where Rodriguez is the highest paid player in the game.
He admitted it? Oh, man.
Wow.
That's terrible, yo.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's quite saddening, actually, as a Yankee fan.
Definitely got to lose the pinstripes.
Bernie Madoff, making a deal? SEC says it has reached an agreement with the disgraced financier that would lead to a fine and the return of some money raised from investors. CBS News chief legal analyst Andrew Cohen.
Just because Madoff has agreed to some sort of a deal in the civil case against him doesn't mean he is automatically going to cave in if and when the criminal case against him comes. But, boy, it sure looks that way because many of the most important facts that support the civil case also support the criminal case.
New study finds multivitamins do nothing to prevent common cancers or heart disease in older women. Results of the 8-year study echo recent disappointing vitamin studies in men. This is CBS News.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service presents a word from the weather.
I am the weather!
Yeah, I've seen you on the news.
But you must fear me!
Afraid I don't. See, my Ford is ready for anything.
No car can withstand the wrath of weather!
Mine can.
What? What do you mean?
Yep. Ford and Lincoln Mercury dealers offer the Works Fuel Saver package. And besides a Motorcraft synthetic blend oil and filter change and tire rotation, it's a complete check of belts and hoses, fluid levels, tires, brakes.
Oh, yeah? How about a little rain? For a lot!
Now, Ford and Lincoln Mercury dealers have a special low price on wiper blades.
Whoa! Kind of knocked the wind right out of me.
Oh, sorry.
The Works Fuel Saver Package is just $29.95 or less after $10 mail-in rebate. Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury parts and service. Come in, keep going. Taxes, diesel, and disposal fees extra. See your participating dealership for rebate details or visit genuineservice.com through 33109.
A whirlwind of hero worship continues. Sully Sullenberger and his crew handed the keys of the city of New York today.
They're figured to be book and movie deals, but for now, Lori Sullenberger says it's hard to look ahead.
We haven't actually thought past Tuesday.
She tells me her husband, Sully, and the rest of the crew of Flight 1549 appreciate the outpouring after the miracle on the Hudson. She says meeting passengers has been part of the healing.
One man introduced his son who was had his 10th birthday, and that was the kind of stuff that you just can't forget.
And about her husband's desire to keep flying, she says no problem. Steve Kathan, CBS News.
Tonight the Sullenbergers are on Broadway taking in the razzle-dazzle of Chicago, the musical. Authorities in Australia say the wildfires in Victoria State have killed at least 173 people, burning 850 square miles. Police suspect arson may be to blame for some of the 400 fires that are raging there right now. I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
Two drivers, two very different stories heading home on a dark evening.
I hit the open road.
I hit the open road.
A deer popped out of nowhere. I panicked.
I saw a deer in the road. I slowed down.
I jerked the wheel. I wish I could have seen it.
I drove around it and was home before the next song on the radio.
With Silver Star headlights from Sylvania, you'll see more of the road ahead. Remember, headlights dim over time. Replace them before you are left in the dark. Visit your automotive retailer and choose the whitest, brightest light. Silver Star headlights from Sylvania.
I'm about to present to you a straightforward commercial for Geico, the third largest personal auto insurer in the country. Last year, over 3 million drivers switched to Geico, and Geico received a customer satisfaction rate of 97%. Standard & Poor's has consistently awarded Geico a AAA rating for financial strength. This is usually where I'd say something cute or clever, but like I said at the beginning, we're keeping this straightforward. Goodbye to you now.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you hundreds on car insurance.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
President Obama, speaking in complete sentences, is giving his first primetime news conference from the East Room of the White House. He has opened up with some comments about the economy and the need to pass his stimulus package. No questions have been proffered by the press so far. Let's listen to President Barack Obama.
Supported by businesses representing almost every industry in America, by both the Chamber of Commerce and the AFL-CIO. It contains input, ideas, and compromises from both Democrats and Republicans. It also contains an unprecedented level of transparency and accountability, so that every American will be able to go online and see where and how we're spending every dime. What it does not contain, however, is a single pet project, not a single earmark, and it has been stripped of the projects members of both parties found most objectionable. Now, despite all of this, the plan's not perfect. No plan is. I can't tell you for sure that everything in this plan will work exactly as we hope, but I can tell you with complete confidence that a failure to act will only deepen this crisis, as well as the pain felt by millions of Americans. Now, my administration inherited a deficit of over $1 trillion. But because we also inherited the most profound economic emergency since the Great Depression, doing little or nothing at all will result in even greater deficits, even greater job loss, even greater loss of income, and even greater loss of confidence. Those are deficits that could turn a crisis into a catastrophe, and I refuse to let that happen. As long as I hold this office, I will do whatever it takes to put this economy back on track and put this country back to work. I want to thank the members of Congress who've worked so hard to move this plan forward. But I also want to urge all members of Congress to act without delay in the coming week to resolve their differences and pass this plan. We find ourselves in a rare moment where the citizens of our country and all countries are watching and waiting for us to lead. It's a responsibility that this generation did not ask for, but one that we must accept for the future of our children and our grandchildren. The strongest democracies flourish from frequent and lively debate, but they endure when people of every background and belief find a way to set aside smaller differences in service of a greater purpose. That's the test facing the United States of America in this winter of our hardship. And it is our duty as leaders and citizens to stay true to that purpose in the weeks and months ahead. After a day of speaking with and listening to the fundamentally decent men and women who call this nation home, I have full faith and confidence that we can do it. But we're going to have to work together. And that's what I intend to promote in the weeks and days ahead. With that, I'll take some of your questions. And let me go to Jennifer Levin at AP. There you go.
Earlier today in Indiana, you said something striking. You said that this nation could end up in a crisis without action that we would be unable to reverse. Can you talk about what you know or what you're hearing that would lead you to say that our recession might be permanent when others in our history have not? And do you think that you risk losing some credibility or even talking down the economy by using dire language like that?
No. I think that what I've said is what other economists have said across the political spectrum, which is that if you delay acting on an economy of this severity, then you potentially create a negative spiral that becomes much more difficult for us to get out of. We saw this happen in Japan in the 1990s, where they did not act boldly and swiftly enough, and as a consequence, they suffered what was called the lost decade, where essentially the entire 90s, they did not see any significant economic growth. So what I'm trying to underscore is what the people in Elkhart already understand, that this is not your ordinary run-of-the-mill recession. We are going through the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression. We've lost now 3.6 million jobs, but what's perhaps even more disturbing is that almost half of that job loss has taken place over the last 3 months, which means that the problems are accelerating instead of getting better. Now, what I said in Elkhart today is what I repeat this evening, which is I'm absolutely confident that we can solve this problem. But it's going to require us to take some significant, important steps. Step number one, we have to pass an economic recovery and reinvestment plan. And we've made progress. There was a vote this evening that moved the process forward in the Senate. We already have a House bill that's passed. I'm hoping over the next several days that the House and the Senate can reconcile their differences and get that bill on my desk. There have been criticisms from a bunch of different directions about this bill. So let me just address a few of them. some of the criticisms really are with the basic idea that government should intervene at all in this moment of crisis. I mean, you have some people, very sincere, who philosophically just think that government has no business interfering in the marketplace. And in fact, there are several who suggested that FDR was wrong to intervene back in the New Deal. They're fighting battles that I thought were resolved a pretty long time ago. Most economists almost unanimously recognize that even if philosophically you're wary of government intervening in the economy, when you have the kind of problem we have right now, what started on Wall Street goes to Main Street, suddenly businesses can't get credit, they start paring back their investment, they start laying off workers, workers start pulling back in terms of spending, that when you have that situation, that government is an important element of introducing some additional demand into the economy. We stand to lose about $1 trillion worth of demand this year and another trillion next year. And what that means is you've got this gaping hole in the economy. That's why the figure that we initially came up with of approximately $800 billion was put forward. That wasn't just some random number that I plucked out of a hat. That was Republican and Democratic, conservative and liberal economists that I spoke to who indicated that given the magnitude of the crisis and the fact that it's happening worldwide, it's important for us to have a bill of sufficient size and scope that we can save or create 4 million jobs. That still means that you're going to have some net job loss, but at least we can start slowing the trend and moving it in the right direction. Now, the recovery and reinvestment package is not the only thing we have to do. It's one leg of the stool. We are still going to have to make sure that we are attracting private capital, get the credit markets flowing again, because that's the lifeblood of the economy. And so tomorrow, my Treasury Secretary, Tim Geithner, will be announcing some very clear and specific plans for how we are going to start loosening up credit once again. And that means having some transparency and oversight in the system. It means that we correct some of the mistakes with TARP that were made earlier, the lack of consistency, the lack of clarity in terms of how the program was going to move forward. It means that we condition taxpayer dollars that are being provided to banks on them showing some restraint when it comes to executive compensation, not using the money to charter corporate jets when they're not necessary. It means that we focus on housing and how are we going to help homeowners that are suffering foreclosure or homeowners who are still making their mortgage payments but are seeing their property values decline. So there are going to be a whole range of approaches that we have to take for dealing with the economy. My bottom line is to make sure that we are saving or creating 4 million jobs. We are making sure that the financial system is working again, that homeowners are getting some relief. And I'm happy to get good ideas from across the political spectrum, from Democrats and Republicans. What I won't do is return to the failed theories of the last 8 years that got us into this fix in the first place, because those theories have been tested, and they have failed, and that's part of what the election in November was all about. Okay? Karen Bowen of Reuters.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to shift gears to foreign policy. What is your strategy for engaging Iran, and when will you start to implement it? Will your timetable be affected at all by the Iranian elections? And are you getting any indications that Iran is interested in a dialogue with the United States?
I said during the campaign that Iran is a country that has extraordinary people, extraordinary history and traditions, but that its actions over many years now have been unhelpful when it comes to promoting peace and prosperity both in the region and around the world. That their attacks or their financing of terrorist organizations like Hezbollah and Hamas, the bellicose language that they've used towards Israel, their development of a nuclear weapon or their pursuit of a nuclear weapon, that all those things create the possibility of destabilizing the region and are not only contrary to our interests, but I think are contrary to the interests of international peace. What I've also said is that we should take an approach with Iran that employs all of the resources at the United States' disposal, and that includes diplomacy. And so my national security team is currently reviewing our existing Iran policy, looking at areas where we can have constructive dialogue, where we can directly engage with them. And my expectation is in the coming months, we will be looking for openings that can be created where we can start sitting across the table, face-to-face, diplomatic overtures that will allow us to move our policy in a new direction. There's been a lot of mistrust built up over the years, so it's not going to happen overnight. And it's important that even as we engage in this direct diplomacy, we are very clear about certain deep concerns that we have as a country, that Iran understands that we find the funding of terrorist organizations unacceptable, that we're clear about the fact that a nuclear Iran could set off a nuclear arms race in the region that would be profoundly...
President Barack Obama speaking to the press, taking questions in the East Room of the White House. You're hearing it on the Peter B. Collins Show. We'll take a quick break and return, get you caught up on traffic and some great moments in advertising. And we've actually been able to pause the stream here coming from the White House, so we'll rejoin it and you won't miss a moment. That's coming up here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
House and protect your investment. Custom painting. Call Don Dickman Painting for a free estimate. Don Dickman Painting, serving Monterey Peninsula and the Big Sur Coast. Quality paint jobs and green painting solutions are fast and affordable. Call 667-2144. For a free estimate, call 667-2144. That's 667-2144. I'm Don Dickman. When quality counts, let us protect your investment. You're in good hands.
With Don Dickman Painting.
We're at www.dondickmanpainting.com.
Go ahead. Take a deep breath.
Yeah, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system, your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hamble, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
Good evening, everyone. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather. In Salinas, we have a traffic collision with an ambulance responding on West Blanco Road at Davis Road. Moving up to Santa Cruz, we have a traffic hazard on Fairview Avenue at Irwin Way. And in the Hollister-Gilroy area, we have a traffic hazard on the southbound 101 at Highway 85. There's a stalled transit bus in the number 2 lane. In weather, it's partly cloudy out on the coast. Inland, it's sunny with some clouds moving in. We have a slight chance of rain this evening, and we'll have temperature lows in the mid to upper 30s. Be sure to bundle up tonight, everybody. And Tuesday will be partly cloudy with highs in the lower to mid 50s. Well, that's your traffic and weather on AM 540. Have a wonderful evening, and stay tuned for more Peter B.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, Barack Obama's first primetime news conference from the East Room of the White House. You haven't missed anything, even though we took a break there. We have the stream paused, and the president was finishing up an answer about his policies toward Iran. And here we go.
...that I think are good policy. Some of them aren't job creators. I think it's perfectly legitimate to say that those programs should be out of this particular recovery package, and we can deal with them later. But when they start characterizing this as pork without acknowledging that there are no earmarks in this package, something, again, that was pretty rare over the last 8 years, then you get a feeling that maybe we're playing politics instead of actually trying to solve problems for the American people. So
I was wrong.
I'm going to keep on engaging.
He moved on to another question.
I hope that as we get the Senate
and the stream didn't
House
pause
bills
for me.
Together, that everybody is willing to give a little bit. I suspect that the package that emerges is not going to be 100% of what I want. But my bottom line is, are we creating 4 million jobs? And are we laying the foundation for long-term economic growth? This is another concern that I've had in some of the arguments that I'm hearing. When people suggest that what a waste of money to make federal buildings more energy efficient, why would that be a waste of money? We're creating jobs immediately by retrofitting these buildings or weatherizing 2 million Americans' homes, as was called for in the package. So that right there creates economic stimulus. And we are saving taxpayers, when it comes to federal buildings, potentially $2 billion. In the case of homeowners, they will see more money in their pockets. And we're reducing our dependence on foreign oil in the Middle East. Why wouldn't we want to make that kind of investment? Now, maybe philosophically, you just don't think that the federal government should be involved in energy policy. I happen to disagree with that. I think that's the reason why we find ourselves importing more foreign oil now than we did back in the early 70s when OPEC first formed. And we can have a respectful debate about whether or not we should be involved in energy policy making. But don't suggest that somehow that's wasteful spending. That's exactly what this country needs. The same applies when it comes to information technologies and healthcare. We know that healthcare is crippling businesses and making us less competitive, as well as breaking the banks of families all across America. And part of the reason is we've got the most inefficient healthcare system imaginable. We're still using paper. We're still filing things in triplicate. Nurses can't read the prescriptions the doctors have written out. Why wouldn't we want to put that on an electronic medical record that will reduce error rates, reduce our long-term cost of health care, and create jobs right now? Education, yet another example. The suggestion is, why should the federal government be involved in school construction? Well, I visited a school down in South Carolina that was built in the 1850s. Kids are still learning in that school as best they can. It's right next to a railroad, and when the train runs by, the whole building shakes and the teacher has to stop teaching for a while. The auditorium is completely broken down. They can't use it. So why wouldn't we want to build state-of-the-art schools with science labs that are teaching our kids the skills they need for the 21st century, that will enhance our economy and, by the way, right now, will create jobs? So, you know, we can differ on some of the particulars. But again, the question I think the American people are asking is, do you just want government to do nothing, or do you want it to do something? If you want it to do something, then we can have a conversation. But doing nothing, that's not an option from my perspective. All right, Chuck Todd. Where's Chuck?
Thank you, Mr. President. We'll put a hold on this for right now and rejoin the President's News Conference in just a couple of minutes here on the Peter B. Collins Show. And I have received word that my former producer and Truth Out reporter Matt Renner is credentialed and is covering this Presidential News Conference, his first at the White House. So we'll keep listening and see if Matt gets to ask a question. Stay tuned for more here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You can share a podcast of any portion of our program with a friend. The link is on my homepage at peterbcollins.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Cornucopia Landscaping in Santa Cruz is a complete design, installation, and maintenance company. Cornucopia Landscaping specializes in water-saving gardens which retain a lush appearance. You can have fruit trees, grapevines, fresh vegetables, and many beautiful ornamental plants while using very little water. In fact, an entire cornucopia landscaping garden sips only as much water in a season as a lawn of equal size gulps down in 1 week. Drip irrigation is the key to a water-saving garden. Are you looking for a beautiful flagstone pathway? Cornucopia Landscaping builds decks, patios, arbors, fences, retaining walls, planter boxes, and many other custom-built wooden structures. Serving Santa Cruz County since 1996. For more information or a consultation, call Davis at 831-335-1209. That's 335-1209. That number again is 335-1209.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero and Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000 mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley Valero and Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley Valero and Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley Valero and Shell. Putting the service back in service stations.
What would life be without flowers? It would be like a birthday cake with no candles, a wedding with no ring. It would be like a graduation without friends and relatives, a promotion without a raise. Thankfully, life is full of flowers and reasons to give them. In fact, sometimes the best reason is no reason at all. And all you have to do is stop by or call Ferrari Florists and Gifts. You see, flowers from Ferrari Florists and Gifts are more personal and special because whatever you're celebrating, we can create unique arrangements from a wide selection of fresh-cut flowers, and we can deliver them the same day. So you can enjoy life and even declare your love with flowers. Call Ferrari Florists and Gifts today at 460-7000 or visit our website at www.ferrariflorist.com. And we'll help you realize the true potential of flowers. Ferrari Florists and Gifts, 514 Front Street, Santa Cruz. Experts in the art of expression.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from the dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and we will rejoin President Obama's news conference in a few minutes. But first, I want to get a first-person account of the proceedings in a federal courtroom here in San Francisco earlier today. This is a case that's been brought against a division of Boeing called Jeppesen Aviation. And Jeppesen essentially was the travel agent for the CIA's extraordinary rendition program. And on the public record, we know that individuals were snatched, kidnapped, taken on jet airplanes to foreign destinations, and in some cases they received torture. Amna Akbar joins us now from the Brennan Center at New York University, where she's involved with the International Human Rights Clinic. Welcome to our program, Amna.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing fine, and thanks for talking with us today. I was very disappointed by what I've read so far, that there appears to be no change between the position of the Bush administration that this case should be dismissed under the state secret privilege and the Obama administration's position under new Attorney General Eric Holder.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, Peter. We walked in today to be greeted by the same exact attorneys that were on the case previously and the same exact arguments that were made at the district court level when the Bush administration was still in power. So Doug Letter, who argued the case on behalf of the government, said that this case that deals with five men who were victims of U.S. government extraordinary rendition and torture program, secret detention program, that their claims are matters of state secrets, and so that no court can adjudicate their claims. Essentially, an extension of the Bush policy of torture followed by secrecy and impunity and no judicial form available for plaintiffs like our clients to receive any kind of judicial remedy.
And I find this deeply offensive because the state's secret privilege is not rooted in law. It is a series of court precedents that were widely abused, in my opinion, by the Bush administration and its lawyers. Most notably, I want the gag order lifted off Sybil Edmonds. I'd like to know what she has to say. But this is a case where there's enough on the public record that I believe that it's a sham to claim that the plaintiffs have no rights to pursue any kind of damages or, legal proceedings against these defendants.
Yeah, what we argued in court today is that given the extensive public debate, international government inquiry about this program, and particularly about some of the plaintiffs in this case, that the government's claim that this is a case that deals with state secrets is absolutely outrageous. to be clear, there is a there is precedent in law about a state secret privilege, but it does not allow what the government is asking for here, which is dismissal of this case before any discovery was filed. Indeed, the U.S. government here asked for the case to be dismissed before Jeppesen even had a chance to answer our complaint. And so even though there may be a valid claim by the U.S. government that certain pieces of information are classified and shouldn't be revealed in an open court of law, that doesn't take us to where they want us to go. In other words, that if there's a program, a CIA program, where the CIA director essentially asserts that it's a matter of state secrets, despite public debate on the issue, that that matter should then be dismissed and outside of the rule of law.
Well, and just as one example, Amna, there was a book published 3 or 4 years ago called Torture Taxi by two journalists from here in the Bay Area. And using amateur plane spotters, they were able to follow the tail numbers of the actual jets that were used to dispatch, to grab and dispatch these individuals. And so to claim that the government can just, you know, put a stamp of secrecy on things that are already very, very public is ludicrous.
Exactly. And that was one of the ridiculous points that the judges really pushed them on today in court. That even if the government wants something to be a secret, how can they then prevent private parties, private individuals like our clients, for example, and their accounts to not be openly discussed in a court of law?
And so did you get a sense from the judge's questions and any skepticism expressed toward the government position that a ruling may come in your favor?
I think, you know, it's a little bit, it's always like reading tea leaves a little bit with this kind of thing, but I think the judges were fairly critical of the government's position. At the outset, they were quite surprised, I think, in a way that this is a position that the Obama administration is maintaining. I think they asked not once but twice for the government attorneys to clarify that the Obama Justice Department has vetted and agreed to this position, and the government's attorneys, you know, clarified in both instances that this is the new administration's policies. They also pushed them, as I mentioned before, on really how broad this privilege is that they're asserting. And so I think we're hopeful with regard to that. But there's really no way to know what the Court of Appeals will do. We hope that they take seriously our argument that, you know, the United States government should not be able to secret away people, kidnap them and torture them and then prevent them from accessing any kind of judicial review.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, back on your point about evidence and public documentation of what's gone on, I mean, in our case, we have an employee of Jeppesen, a whistleblower, if you will, who has filed a declaration in court saying that in the early stages of his employment before he was fired, that senior management openly spoke of the fact that they flew the torture flights. So I think beyond the journalist investigation that have documented this program, we have someone from the inside stating that that Jeppesen knowingly cooperated in these CIA flights that you know, led to the torture and disappearance of our clients for some time.
And Amna, what else would you like to add that you observed in these proceedings today?
I guess in terms of observations, you know, we're happy with some of the steps that we've seen Obama take in the last few days. But I think the thing that was just alarming is that from the executive orders that he signed in his first week of office until today, what's been clear is that although Obama seems committed to changing the forward-looking policy in some major ways, with the U.S. government's war on terrorism and the CIA's detention and rendition program, one thing that the new administration seems unwilling to do is to address past human rights violations that it has caused to, you know, clients like the plaintiffs in, like the plaintiffs in this case. And I think that is really something that civil society needs to push the Obama administration on, that there are victims to these programs, that there are real people whose lives were destroyed, whose families are destroyed. There are still people disappeared in this rendition and secret detention program,
mm-hmm.
and that without addressing those voices and those victims, we can't really make progress in this country and reestablish any kind of respectability as a country that respects human rights and the rule of law.
I fully support what you just said, Amna Akbar, and the other thing that's a little encouraging today, and all these things are only a little encouraging, is that Senator Pat Leahy, the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, has joined the call for a truth commission. And this may be our best hope to pry open the secrets of the past and to force both reconciliation and accountability, including criminal accountability through the courts. And it's not everything that I've been hoping for, but at least it shows that not all of our political leaders, not all Democrats, want to just cover over the wrongdoing of the Bush administration.
I think that's right. I mean, any attempt to take a look at what has happened over the last few years to uncover the policies that the Bush administration tried so hard to erase and hide away is crucial to our being able to move forward and crucial to, you know, giving some accountability and some redress to victims of the program. I mean, I work at the Human Rights Clinic at NYU Law School, and the co-plaintiff that we represent, Mohammed Bashmila, one of the very basic things that he's looking for is an acknowledgement from the U.S. government that he was held in the secret detention program, which to this day he has not received.
Mm-hmm. And Amna, before we wrap up here, what are the next steps here? The appeals court will review this and issue a decision, or is there a chance that the government will force this into a full panel, an en banc hearing before the entire Ninth Circuit?
Well, I think the first step will be a decision, and it's anyone's guess how soon the Ninth Circuit will rule. But what we're hoping for is a ruling that the case should go back down to the district court level, where we can engage in discovery and ask some questions of Jeppesen about their role in this program and what they knew about what they were doing when they flew our clients into the secret prison network. Once the Ninth Circuit makes a decision, you know, then whether or not it goes to en banc, we'll just have to see at that time. But right now we're just watching closely and hoping for a good decision in the near future.
All right. Amna, pleasure talking with you. And my notes show that you're a producer of a weekly radio show on Pacifica in New York. Is it also heard here in California?
On the web.
Okay. And what's the name of the program?
It's Asia Pacific Forum. It's a weekly show that covers Asian American news, culture, and politics.
Okay. Well, nice to talk to a fellow radio person, and thank you for your advocacy on behalf of these individuals.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Nice to talk with you. That's Amna Akbar, and she is a clinical fellow at the Brennan Center's International Human Rights Clinic, New York University. Now let's rejoin President Barack Obama's news conference, and we'll see where it is in progress here. We're buffering.
And the package that we've put together is designed to help do that. And beyond that, I'm going to make sure that Tim gets his moment in the sun tomorrow. All right? Major Garrett, where's Major?
Mr. President, at a speech Friday that many of us covered, Vice President Biden said the following thing about a conversation the two of you had in the Oval Office about a subject he didn't disclose. If we do everything right, if we do it with absolute certainty, if we stand up there and we really make the tough decisions, there's still a 30% chance we're going to get it wrong. Since the Vice President brought it up, can you tell the American people, sir, what you were talking about? And if not, can you at least reassure them it wasn't the stimulus bill or the bank rescue plan? And if in general you agree with that ratio of success, 30% failure, 70% success?
You know, I don't remember exactly what Joe was referring to. Not surprisingly. But let me try this out. I think what Joe may have been suggesting, although I wouldn't put numerical, I wouldn't ascribe any numerical percentage to any of this, is that given the magnitude of the challenges that we have, any single thing that we do is going to be part of the solution, not all of the solution. And as I said in my introductory remarks, not everything we do is going to work out exactly as we intended it to work out. You know, this is an unprecedented problem. And, you know, when you talk to economists, there's some general sense of how we're going to move forward. There's some strong consensus about the need for a recovery package of a certain magnitude. There's a strong consensus that you shouldn't put all your eggs in one basket, all tax cuts or all investment, but that there should be a range of approaches. But even if we do everything right on that, we've still got to deal with what we just talked about, the financial system and making sure the banks are lending again. We're still going to have to deal with housing. We're still going to have to make sure that we've got a regulatory structure, a regulatory architecture for the financial system that prevents crises like this from occurring again. Now, those are all big, complicated tasks. So I don't know whether Joe was referring to that, but I use that as a launching point to make a general point about these issues. I have no idea. I really don't. Michael Fletcher, Washington Post.
Yeah, thank you, sir. What is your reaction to Alex Rodriguez's admission that he used steroids as a member of the Texas Rangers?
Yeah, I think it's depressing news on top of what's been a flurry of depressing items when it comes to Major League Baseball. And if you're a fan of Major League Baseball, I think it it tarnishes an entire era to some degree. And it's unfortunate because I think there are a lot of ball players who played it straight. And you know, the thing I'm probably most concerned about is the message that it sends to our kids. What I'm pleased about is Major League Baseball seems to finally be taking this seriously, to recognize how big of a problem this is for the sport, and that our kids hopefully are watching and saying, you know what, there are no shortcuts. That when you try to take shortcuts, you may end up tarnishing your entire career, and that your integrity is not worth it. That's the message I hope is communicated.
The president's conducting a news conference. That was a dumb question, and I figure next they're going to ask about Michael Phelps and the bong. Good time to take a break. We'll return to more of Barack Obama's press conference here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Good evening, everyone. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather report. Currently, I'm checking the boards, and we have no incidents to report at this time in the Tri-County area. So have a great commute. And weather, tonight is partly cloudy with a slight chance of showers this evening. Lows will be in the mid to upper 30s. Tomorrow, we expect it to be partly cloudy with highs in the lower to mid 50s and north winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tuesday night, rain is likely and lows will be in the lower 40s. Well, that's your traffic and weather on AM 540. Have a wonderful evening, everyone, and keep it tuned to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Ever thought about shipping your child to a remote island? Want to send them to their room for the rest of their life? I can help. I'm Mark Lecluse, an intern psychotherapist practicing in SoCal under the supervision of Dr. Chaim Barton. For the past 10 years, I've been helping parents, teens, and kids overcome challenges in their lives, and I'd like to help you too. I can work with your family to resolve conflicts, improve communications, and solve problems. Together, we can turn struggles and challenges into opportunities for growth and connection. I offer an affordable sliding scale, and I'm currently accepting new clients. Please call for an appointment. 831-818-4033. Parenting doesn't have to be so hard. I'm Mark Lecluse. Give me a call. 818-4033. That's 818-4033.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, The Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show with the Presidential News Conference, and let's see what they're asking now. Sam Stein from Huffington Post has just recognized.
Is that my administration is going to operate in a way that leaves no doubt that we do not torture, and that we abide by the Geneva Conventions, and that we observe our traditions of rule of law and due process as we are vigorously going after terrorists that can do us harm. And I don't think those are contradictory. I think they are potentially complementary. My view is also that nobody's above the law. And if there are clear instances of wrongdoing, that people should be prosecuted just like any ordinary citizen, but that generally speaking, I'm more interested in looking forward than I am in looking backwards. I want to pull everybody together, including, by the way, all the members of the intelligence community who have done things the right way and have been working hard to protect America, and I think sometimes are painted with a broad brush without adequate information. So I will take a look at Senator Leahy's proposal, but my general orientation is to say let's get it right moving forward.
Getting a little buffering issue here in the White House feed.
Mr. President, if it's this hard to get more than a handful of Republican votes on what is relatively easy, spending tons of money and cutting people's taxes, when you look down the road at health care and entitlement reform and energy reform, those are really tough choices. You're going to be asking some people to get less and some people to pay more. What do you think you're going to have to do to get more bipartisanship? Are you going to need a new legislative model, bringing in Republicans from the very beginning, getting more involved in the details yourself from the beginning, or using bipartisan commissions? What has this experience with the stimulus led you to think about when you think about?
It was going very smoothly. This is apparently too many people logged on to the White House server watching the presidential news conference right now. And it has stalled just as she got finished asking that question. Let's see if I can restart it here. This is interesting just as a media point of view that in the past they would put up a presidential news conference afterward. But I am not aware that Bush ever streamed one live, and this is the new Obama White House and some of the efforts they're doing to make things directly accessible and in some ways bypass the media filter. So I guess we're stalled here. Let me try one more time, see if we can jumpstart this. We need a video stimulus. Well, I guess that's as much as we're going to get. You heard part of the answer to a question from the Huffington Post, Sam Stein, about Senator Leahy's call for a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. He's not the first to do so, but he is joining in that that campaign. And I fully support that. I want more, but certainly if that's what's offered, I will accept it.
what I haven't heard, and we did drop out of the news conference for quite a while there to get the report from Amna Akbar about the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals hearing that was held here today, and the very discouraging news that the same lawyers who argued for Bush, that these cases, this one case for five individuals, should be dismissed because it would expose state secrets. It's very disappointing that the Obama team under the new attorney general is not changing the tune in any way, not that we can identify at this point. Now, she described some of the judges on the three-judge panel as skeptical of the government's position. But as we've seen, there have been very few courts willing to challenge the executive branch, at least while Bush was there, on these kinds of issues. If the executive asserts this kind of a state secret or other, you know, national security privilege, the courts have been extremely, and in my view, exceedingly deferential. So that's as much as we can bring you of the president's news conference today. But when you get home, you might be able to catch part of it replayed on C-SPAN later on this evening. And, you know, I have so many mixed feelings because Obama isn't saying everything I want to hear, but he is displaying a great deal of intelligence, a great deal of awareness, and it is just such a quantum leap forward to have a president who thinks on his feet in complete sentences and doesn't simply reach for the lines and the talking points that he's been forced to memorize. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. We'll be back at you tomorrow. Same time, same great radio stations. Trigger, let's ride.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you.
Bonjour, this is Véronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. I've created a special offer for you to try my French wines made from organically grown grapes. For a limited time, when you buy two bottles, you get one bottle free, and I'll even pay for the shipping. I know you love the taste of these handcrafted wines from my ancestors' lands, especially if you care about our planet and your health. Imagine, you can have organic French wine delivered to your door for less than $12 a bottle. I've made this free wine and free shipping offer available to you because I believe you'll become a lifelong customer once you've tasted our wines. The French Bouquet Collection at ecowine.com includes my red Chateau Véronique from Languedoc, my white Viognier, and my Blanquette de Limoux sparkling wine. All French, organically grown, and affordable.
For free delivery, click on ecowine.com/Peter B. That's ecowine.com/...
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor.
This is not your ordinary run-of-the-mill recession.
President Barack Obama.
We are going through the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression.
Right now, holding his first primetime presidential news conference and the subject, fixing the economy.
The citizens of our country and all countries are watching and waiting for us to lead. It's a responsibility that this generation did not ask for, but one that we must accept for the future of our children and our grandchildren.
President Obama gets what he wanted from the Senate today.
I'm Bob Fuss on Capitol Hill. President Obama's stimulus plan won a key victory in the Senate, garnering 61 votes, one more than needed to stop a Republican filibuster aimed at killing it, Missouri's Kit Bond.
We're not going to vote for a pig in a poke.
But three Republicans broke with their party, and that was enough to pass a measure Montana Democrat Max Baucus helped guide through the Senate's rocky shoals.
Millions of jobs depend on the adoption of this amendment.
A final vote's expected tomorrow, after which the Senate bill must be reconciled with the one passed earlier by Democrats in the House. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
And that presidential news conference just now ending. He admits he did it. He says he's sorry. Alex Rodriguez and steroids on ESPN today.
I'm sorry for that time. I'm sorry to my fans. I'm sorry for my fans in Texas. It wasn't until then that I ever thought about substance of any kind. And since then, I've proved to myself and to everyone that I don't need any of that.
Today, Rodriguez wears pinstripes. New York Yankees announcer Susan Waldman.
Alex's legacy and the things that were the most important to him, those records, the Hall of Fame, all that he wants to be. Right now, it's over.
Her partner in the booth, John Sterling, he disagrees.
That's 12 years or 13 years or 14 years down the line. And I think that's plenty of time to repair his legacy.
Authorities in Australia suspect arson may be to blame for some of the 400 fires raging there. The wildfires in Victoria State killing at least 173 people. Did you get to where you were going for the holidays? Did you get there on time? CBS's John Hartshee.
On-time performance declined dramatically in December.